All right, good evening. We will start the meeting. Welcome to everyone who is with us this evening. My name is Paula Reet, Mayor of Kingborough. It's great to see so many in the public gallery this evening. Just a reminder, if you can make sure your mobile phones are off, please. We are streaming this live, and that does interrupt the feed. Time being 5:30pm, I now officially declare the meeting open. I wish to advise that council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website and are also live streamed on YouTube. So in accordance with council's policy, I'll ask the CEO to confirm that the audio recording has started.
Yes.
Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay my respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Our attendees this evening are myself, Councillor Reet, the Deputy Mayor, Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Richardson and Councillor Street. From our staff this evening, we have the CEO, Mr Stewart, the Director of People and Finance, Mr Spinks, our Director of Engineering Services, Mr Mackey, our Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr Smee, our Director of Environment, Development and Community Services, Ms Shakuti, our Manager of Finance, Mr Jones, our Manager of Development Services, Ms Tyler Moore, Senior Planner, Mrs DeVries, Coordinator, Development Engineering, Mr Johnson, Communications Lead, Ms Adams, and our Executive Assistant, Mrs Morton. We have apologies this evening from Councillor Cordova. Takes us to page 9, confirmation. No, it doesn't take us to page 9, that takes us to page 1. That's Mrs. Morton trying to trick me on my running sheet. Confirmation of minutes. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting number 9 held on the 2nd of June 2025 be confirmed as a true record. I've got a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in the Deputy Mayor. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. Workshops held since the last council meeting. We have not had one. We had it was a public holiday, and then we had a Tuesday off. Declarations of interest. Does any councillor have an interest that they would like to declare? No, thank you. Transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed session or closed into open session? No, thank you. Takes us to questions without notice from the public. Does any member of the public who's with us this evening, would they like to ask a question? If so, you can just come up to the microphone, please. Just say your name and the suburb in which you live. Just need to press the button on the... one of the councillors will assist you. Yep, that's it.
How do we go?
Thank you very much.
Excellent. Good evening. Peter Harrison, Allen's Rivulet. I've been a ratepayer in Kingborough for just over 40 years. I spoke to the general manager the other day and asked, would it be possible to do a short preamble? She assured me as long as I kept it short, that would be all right, and I hope that is all right with you guys. I'll be as quick as possible. I was a primary school teacher for over 40 years, and during that time, one of the things besides the curriculum that we pushed was common courtesy. And I'm sure we all would possibly agree that common courtesy is not what it once was. We used to push names in my classroom. Using somebody's name was considered really important, a sign of respect. And it wasn't long before that caught on within the group, which was fantastic. And then we moved on to other courtesies, holding doors open, etc. And when I retired 3 years ago, I thought, well, that's done and dusted. However, I joined the Kingston Men's Shed 3 years ago. In the first year, we decided to run a Cancer Council Big Morning Tea for the guys. And that went over really, really well. We had lots of wives, lots of partners, etc. The second year, we decided to do the same. And one of your ex-councillors, a fellow by the name Paul Chatterton, suggested we should invite all the councillors, the mayor, the deputy mayor, etc. We did that, or at least I did that, because in my second year I became secretary. I sent out letters. I sent out emails. Now, it was interesting, in that first year, got a response from the mayor, got a response from the deputy mayor, and after that there was silence. 8 councillors did not respond. My first thought was, I've obviously mucked up the emails. But then I checked them. No, I hadn't. This year, I'll give you guys another chance. Sent them out again. But to double check myself, I delivered down to the office a hard copy of those that would then be put in your letterboxes. And I was assured that you would get them. The mayor, the deputy mayor, and Casper Dean were the only people who responded. The only people. So the rest of you that are sitting there have had 3 invites in 2 years and not able to respond. We don't expect you to turn up because we know most of you have got other jobs. But there is a common courtesy there that most of you have not fulfilled. So, I have a question, which I'm interested in the answer, not now. I'd like you guys to respond to this at some stage. I have a question that our committee at the Shed, when we discussed it last Thursday, would be interested in your answer. And I know, because I've talked to the guys at Morning Tea about this, we would be interested in your answer. The question is, what does the Kingston Men's Shed have to do to be considered important enough for councillors to take 2 minutes of their day to reply to an invitation? So I'm going to leave that one with you guys. If you've got an answer, have a look at our website, drop me a line, and I'll get it because I'm the contact person for the Shed.
Thank you. If I can respond on behalf of councillors, firstly, I apologise that that has been the case because certainly I would like to think, as the leader of a council, which hopefully we do come across as caring at times, and I've always said I want to lead a caring community as well, we should be responding to those invitations. I certainly, when I became aware that there had been some difficulty in, I think, time commitments of people having not been able to respond, I did send an email around to my colleagues and said, could you please just be aware that it is nice to know that invitations are being responded to. Unfortunately, I am the spokesperson for council, but I'm not... I don't have any authority over my fellow councillors, but I have certainly encouraged them to please do that and please accept my apologies. It's not intended to be a reflection of the value of the work that the Kingston Men's Shed does, because I think that many of us are aware of that. So I apologise. I look forward to being there tomorrow. And because certainly what you're doing in trying to raise money for the Cancer Council in particular is very important, but I know that the support that the Shed does offer to many men in the community, and that is very, very important as well. So I will let my colleagues reflect on your contribution.
Thank you, Mayor.
Are there any further questions for members of the community? Thank you.
Mark Donnellan from Huntingfield.
This question might relate to an agenda item, as it's about how something is financed that the council is responsible for. May I put the question? Yeah.
Yep. if it's not, you'll have to tell us what it is. I mean, if it's and then I'll have to make that judgment.
I'm wondering, has the state or federal governments ever committed any long-term funding that might be put towards the Kingborough Sports Centre as a preventive health measure and a way to encourage more people to participate in that physical activity?
Yeah. Not that I'm aware of. We certainly have... at previous elections, put proposals to state and federal governments to help us in extending the sports centre, because as you'd probably be aware, we're at pretty much capacity now. There are 33 different sporting clubs that operate out of that whole sports centre precinct, but there is particular demand for the indoor courts. We've taken a bit of a step forward today in that the Tasmanian Jack Jumpers High Performance Centre that is going to be built in Kingston has had the first sod turned, and that will mean that'll be completed in 12 months' time, and that will free up some capacity at the sports centre. But we could do with four additional courts. We currently have four indoor courts there. We need four additional courts there. Unfortunately, those requests have been falling on deaf ears because we know that particularly for emerging sports like pickleball, which are very much being embraced, particularly by people who want to move indoors away from playing tennis out in the elements. And the CEO and I had a meeting with the Pickleball Association recently, and they're saying they're fielding inquiries from so many people who want to play, but they don't have enough facilities in which to play. So it would be a wonderful initiative if we could have that extended. Unfortunately, that hasn't been the case to date, but we will certainly continue to push that case. I'd hesitate, I guess, to say there's not a lot of money going around in this election for things, but we'll certainly continue to advocate on behalf of the community so that we can meet the demand that we know is there for the use of the facilities at the sports centre.
Great. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Does anyone else have any questions? Please come forward. Oh, just have to press the button, please. That's it, so the red light comes on. No, the red light's not on. There we go.
Hello.
Thank you.
Thank you. Phil Haynes at James Avenue, Mount Royal. It's a very obvious sight on the hill as you go up Mount Royal on the right-hand side. Every day I look at the beach, because that's my front door. I can look at the beach straight on, from the swings to the end of the beach. Now, I didn't think the cars between the Beach Road and Victoria Street was a car park, all-day car park. There are some spots there which are for bikes. Some that's for disabled people right in front of the shops, about a quarter of an hour they can park. But there's a whole group of people who park there every day in working hours. Okay. And it's not other people who've noticed. People in the front who live down there have noticed it, and they think, oh, you know, I don't think it's a whole day car park.
No.
I think it's access for people who want to go to the beach for a little while, the kids in the summertime and so on. It's also starting to drift south of the spring, the swings on the beach. Mm-hmm. There's a spot there that seems to be just chock-a-block full. Also, when I drive around, the development after the Kingborough Church there, after Forking the Road, there's another big roundabout there. Mm-hmm. There's obviously going to be a massive development there. And what are they going to do with people who live there and they want to get to the city, like another park and ride spot there? Somehow the council should acquire some land and put in at least a shelter in the winter if people have to get to the city and they need to catch a bus.
Yep. So just in relation... Has any
planning or thought about this?
So not as yet. That development has been done by Homes Tasmania. That is, I can't think of the number of lots off the top of my head. I think 470 lots.
470 lots. Yeah. See, that's a lot of houses.
It is. There is still a significant amount of capacity in the Huntingfield Park and Ride, which is just right there at the fork on the road.
I mean, with that amount of houses going in and other people, it'll be full very quickly.
Yep. It's only about 50% capacity at the moment, that park and ride, so it does have quite a bit of availability, making the assumption that people are going to take up the option of public transport, because one of the frustrating things is that only 7% of people who are commuting into the city are using public transport. So it would still need quite a few people to hop on the buses to fill that up. All we can do in relation to that is keep an eye on it to see what happens with that, you know, whether the demand is there in the future once those lots go online, which is some years away. I think they're only just starting with a handful of lots at the moment. So before, it'll still be a few years before we start to see houses go in there. In relation to parking at Kingston Beach, we can draw that to the attention of our compliance team. I know that they do checks in that area, just as they do checks in some of our other short-term car parks. Yep. We had a bit of an issue some time ago where our Skipper Lane car park was full and people were then using the Kingston Park playground car park to park all day, so we got the compliance team to go over and keep an eye on that to free up those spaces so that they are used for people who are either going to be visiting those areas for a short time, like going to the beach, going to the park in that case, or patronising the businesses along there at Kingston Beach. So now that we know that that's an issue, we'll make sure we get our compliance team to go down there and have a look at it.
Could I bring up one point? I live in James Avenue, which is Roslyn Avenue down to Mount Royal. On the place on the corner on the top side, the thing I have always been concerned with is the maintenance on my property. It's a big property. And I filled in some potholes on the front where the lawn touches the road. And I saw somebody coming up taking a lot of photographs. And I said, what are you doing? Then I had a demand from the council, from the compliance people. Oh, this should be done. No, you've got to put it back this way, this way, this way. When I heard what they wanted to do, it didn't make engineering common sense. When you block a drain, water doesn't flow. We live in Tasmania, which has got a pretty low rainfall. We're not subject to tropical downfalls. And some of the comments made by a compliance officer were quite loony. Now also, too, I brought to the council's notice in front of my property, because of the service trucks, they come down, they're heavy, they were touching the edge of the road and the road was starting to break up. Okay, somebody came down the second day after I mentioned it, they stabilised the edge of the road, but also that road too has been cracked in quite a substantial amount, because up in the valley where James Avenue is, that's all been concreted. Okay. And trucks took millions and, well, not millions, but hundreds of tons of dirt down that street, and they've broken the road up, and there's a lot of cracks and so on the road. That'll deteriorate very quickly. There was one pothole there. It had been there for 2 years, and I said, look, if somebody comes down on a push bike at night, they'll hit that pothole and go over the handlebars. It's incredibly dangerous, incredibly dangerous, and so they fixed it.
Okay.
But my concern is that sometimes I have people, well, put it bluntly, snooping around, trying to get evidence, and what they say, they don't know what they're talking about.
Okay.
These are compliance officers.
Yep.
Sorry, but they don't.
All right. If you have a specific, have a specific complaint about a compliance matter, then you can lodge a complaint and we can look into it for you.
I can't hear. What did you say?
So if you have a specific complaint about a compliance matter, you can lodge a formal complaint with us and we can get it investigated. Because what I'm hearing from you is that you're concerned about...
Okay, I understand what you're saying. When I made this complaint about fixing the edge of the road, that was done, sure. Then somebody a couple of days later with a whole truck, or substantial truck of red metal, just flushed it all in the drain. And I said, what'd you do that for? Oh, that stabilises the gutter. No, it doesn't stabilise. It just flicks everywhere. Mm. So what I did, because that man didn't know what he was talking about, it wasn't an engineering principle. I took the gravel out and put somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a waste of money. It didn't work. Because if I went down and cut the grass, cars that were parked on the other side of the road would have had rocks and I'd be smashing the windows.
Hmm.
I maintain that area. The council does not.
Well, I'd suggest when you do see issues like that, and like you obviously have in the past, where you've seen an issue like the pothole, then you get on to our website or call customer service straight away to lodge a service request so that we can get that fixed very quickly. Well, and it sounds like that is what has occurred.
I have done that in the past.
Great.
And certain people in the compliance officer will not face me.
Okay.
That's it. They won't face me. Scott Basham particularly.
Okay.
And Richard Tomlin.
Well, I'd prefer it if we didn't name staff in this forum. If you wish to, we have a process for making formal complaints. But so if you'd like to do that, I would encourage you to do that, and then the CEO will look into that for you. But I wouldn't want to get into a situation where there are staff members being defamed in this public forum at the moment.
No, I understand what you mean.
Thank you.
People don't like me. That's about it. And they won't face me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any further questions? No, thank you. We are at questions on notice from the public on page 2. We had a question in relation to the Margate Cricket Club and Channel United Primary School clubrooms from Emerson Booth, with a response from Mr. Smee. If anybody does wish to submit a question on notice, they can do so by completing the relevant form on Council's website or by emailing us at kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. Questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor have a question without notice? Councillor Richardson?
Nope.
No. Okay. Councillor Midgley.
Oh, sorry. We're sharing. Sharing is caring. Sorry. With the state election being on, what are the impacts for our municipality? I guess in regards to already promised funded projects and the big one, if you know what I mean, in regards to the High Performance Centre.
Well, I think the short answer to that is that everything's in a bit of a holding pattern at the moment. I've already alluded to the fact that we had the launch of the Jack Jumpers High Performance Centre construction starting today, and there were no state government representatives that were in attendance at that because of being in caretaker mode. And as you're aware, the state budget did not pass, so I'm not sure of... Matt, the CEO can probably bring us up to date if there was any funding that we were expecting from any grants as part of that that now will be deferred, because I know certainly that a lot of community organisations are now finding themselves in a difficult situation where their funding will not flow when they expect it to after the passage of the bill, the budget bills, and that could put some not-for-profits into great difficulty. But CEO, would you like to discuss the broader implications of the budget?
Yeah, thank you, and through you, Mayor. So obviously the government has gone into caretaker mode now, which essentially means that no new expenditure is being signed off out of the state government. So the budget that was passed last week basically provides business continuity for state services but doesn't include any new expenditure or unbudgeted expenditure that would have passed in the budget that had been under debate previously. What that means for council is there might be some delays to some budget sources that normally we would be looking for. Things like grants may be delayed in terms of when they become available and when we can apply for them. We need to see how that plays out, and we'll continue to take advice from the various state services about any budget lines or programs that are funded under their auspices. In regard to, I believe you're asking about the AFL High Performance Centre in particular, look, that's one that is, I guess, council, I need to be clear about what council's role in this is. So we are not the funder of that program of work. Our role in it is to deliver, with funding from the state government, the community-related infrastructure that enables the delivery of that program. So that's, you know, two new ovals, new club rooms, upgrade of Gormley Drive, things like that. At this stage, we don't have all the budget we require to do those works locked in. We do have a budget allocation that we are using to pay staffing within that space and fund consultancy-based works that are required to move us towards a position where construction would occur. We don't have contracted capital budget to be able to do those works yet. So Council's position is that we will not undertake any spend that we haven't already been funded for. So we will not be putting the Kingborough ratepayer on the hook for any sort of costs associated with this programme of work. We have enough budget from this programme to continue business as usual in terms of the development and planning. We are, however, in constant conversation with colleagues within departments within the state government to ensure that we have as close a relationship as we possibly can and finding a way to maintain the forward progress of this really important project during this period of uncertainty, so that when we come out the back end, and depending on the nature of the government that's elected and their budgetary related choices, we're in a position to move forward with haste at that point in time.
Anything further, Councillor Midgley?
Thank you. Thanks very much for that update. In that proposed state budget, I was made aware that in regards to the cycling grants for local roads, there was actually a big fat zero for that grant project from 2026. And I understand that grant project particularly has had some really great outcomes for Kingborough. And so I'm wondering at all, is there any way that we can lobby to ensure that that grant program actually continues?
I think the only thing we'll have to do for now is wait for a new government, whatever that might look like, to be formed, and then start some advocacy around that. Certainly I know we've got lots of projects in relation to increasing the levels of different forms of transport, but particularly shared bike paths and so on throughout the municipality that we've been asking for funding for a while. So it would be great to see it continue. So I think let's have a conversation about what that advocacy might look like post-election.
Great, thank you. And just one further question. When we approve the compostable dog poo bags, I think I requested if we could have some signage on the actual, the bin places where the dog poo bags are, so that mm-hmm. people actually know that those bags can be compostable, but I've been told that we haven't got any sort of stickers or signage or anything like that. And I guess it's again that whole waste messaging. We need to kind of remind people that
educating
that's what they can
community.
Do. So I just if possible, it'd be great to see some movement if we can get some sort of signage.
Yep, we'll take that on board. Thank you. Further questions, Councillor Dean.
Thanks, Mayor. Just a bit of a follow up on Councillor Midge's, just in relation to the High Performance Centre. Obviously, election has been called. Just wondering, you've talked a little bit about our advocacy. I wonder what your thoughts would be on potentially just writing to our political leaders and reminding them of the importance of this facility to our precinct, not just the precinct actually, to I guess the whole region. Just see if that's something that we as a council or you as mayor would consider doing on behalf of the community.
Look, certainly, and today's developments with the Jack Jumpers High Performance Centre has kind of cemented for me the fact that, we are going to be very fortunate indeed to hopefully have the two high performance centres here and all the economic and social benefits that will flow from those. And I think that it would be very prudent of us to be writing to political leaders and independent candidates and emphasising the importance of the High Performance Centre to this region. Just looking at the group of players and performance staff and front office staff who were gathered today for the Jack Jumpers one, the amount of people that will be additional people that will be working in Kingborough will be very significant, even more so when the Tasmanian Devils arrive. Excuse me. So, yes, that would be a valuable advocacy tool that we could pull out, and we'll endeavour to do that sooner rather than later. The writs aren't issued until, I think, Wednesday, so not all candidates have been announced at the moment, but we'll get onto that as soon as we know who all the candidates in the area are.
Thank you, Matt. And just one other question completely out of left field, actually, from what we've been talking about all night. Just relates to, it came up, I think, previously in discussions about a new waste fee that's going to be levied on residents for recycling their used motor oil. I posted something on social media just alerting people that at the moment it is still free,
yep,
and it's something that other councils do as well, and that as of July 1, we heard in our new fees and charges that that would have to be passed on. That was a $1 per litre fee, nothing to do with us, but from the collection company. And that garnered a fair bit of interest, particularly around the, I guess, the risk or fear that people have that that might just not end up happening, and obviously oil just ends up being disposed of otherwise. So just on behalf of that concern, I suppose I wanted to dig a little bit deeper about that fee and just to try and find out what the budgetary impact might be if we were to consider, I say, suggest foregoing that fee. I've no idea how many litres were collected last year and how much it would actually cost us to do this, but I know $1 a litre doesn't sound like a lot, but if you change a couple of cars, and it's just another barrier. So I just wanted to ask if, obviously we don't have the numbers on hand, but if put on notice just to find out how many litres were recycled in the last financial year.
I don't believe we have that figure. We'd have to take that on notice. And I have to admit, having very few mechanical skills myself, I couldn't even tell you how many litres of... Well, there's actually no oil in my car because it's electric, but I couldn't tell you how many litres... Well, I don't think there is. But I couldn't tell you how many litres of oil would come out of a regular car. So I don't know how we... but I'm sure that we would have those figures at KWS. Did you want to add something to that, CEO?
Yeah, through you, Mayor. Look, yeah, we can find out on notice about how many litres of oil that we took through Beretta last year. I guess at a general principle response, this is a cost recovery fee. The costs have increased on KWS, on council, for the disposal of oil, and this is really just passing that cost on to our community, to the users of this service. So it's a principle that we have around disposing of waste, that we make sure that we're doing that on a way that we recover the cost that we incur in providing that service. So from a general level, that's it. I would highly encourage everyone to do the right thing with any oil that they have rather than disposing of it in inappropriate ways. There are obviously, severe damage to the environment that would occur with people doing the wrong thing in that sense. And there are fines that would exist if people do the wrong thing here. So highly encourage people to take the motor oil to Beretta to dispose of it appropriately. $1 a litre, I take your point about it can add up, but at the same time it's a very modest charge to make sure that we're doing the right thing and disposing of the product appropriately.
Any further questions? No, we'll move on. Questions on notice from councillors. There was a question from Councillor Bain in relation to the CCTV network with a response from Mr Stewart. And just to add to that response, I'm aware that because of the government going into caretaker mode, that is on hold as well, because the MOU was requiring an exemption for something from the Attorney-General. So it is, in the words of our former Director of Engineering, it is imminent but held up. So hopefully we will see that once the election has finished. So the open session of Council now adjourns, and Planning Authority commences at 6:04 p.m. We're on page 4, Officers' Reports to Planning Authority. We're on DAS 2022-29, DA for subdivision creating 7 residential lots, balance lot, road lot and associated works at 3031 Channel Highway Kettering, Council Land and Ferry Road and Channel Highway Road reservations, with a recommendation for refusal on page 35. And I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in the Deputy Mayor and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. So we're considering a proposed subdivision in Kettering, and the recommendation is for refusal. There were many representations, 7, and also a petition with 21 signatures. And they raised many relevant issues, which the author of the report agreed with. Some of those issues were impacts to trees, footway links, road standards, privacy, access from the subdivision road to existing lots, site works, wastewater management, access from Ferry Road, stormwater management and fencing. My reading of the report, though, the main sticking point was that there was no right-of-way proposed. The report indicates that the proposal is not consistent with LUPA and it does not allow for fair, orderly and sustainable development of the land. And the Local Government Act allows the Planning Authority to refuse the application if it is of the opinion that the layout of the subdivision should be altered. So my questions are related to that. Regarding altering the layout, given that we want our community to succeed in realising their development opportunities, have we considered or suggested an alternative layout which would allow a permit?
Ms Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, it's not our role to come up with a redesign. Certainly we've had discussions with the applicant about the challenges to do with this proposal, which included the number of lots that they're wanting to achieve. The number of lots that they want to achieve is pushing everything to the limit in terms of the space available for future development, because we also need to keep in mind people need to develop on these sites in the future. There's no point dividing up land and then being so difficult and impractical for people to build on, or it causes amenity impacts off the site as well. So certainly we have had several meetings and discussions over the period of this application about some of the issues that they need to address, which would then come up with a redesign. But they've decided to pursue this particular layout and design.
Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. Okay, thank you for that. The other thing I noticed in the report that there are lots of comments that say on balance such and such. For example, on balance it is recommended that the proposed development is not supported in relation to blah, blah, blah. So with this comment on balance, it sort of makes me think that it could have kind of gone either way, and so you sort of had to consider lots of things and then on balance we decided a certain thing. So my question is just about the process here. How many people assess these sorts of applications and come up with that statement that on balance we think such and such?
Ms Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, the term on balance possibly overused in the report. I would have to look at it again to see. The on balance is really talking about when you have acceptable solutions and you have performance criteria, and as you're aware by looking at the report and the content, the performance criteria particularly has several elements to it, so they might meet one or two of them but not the other one. So on balance it hasn't quite made it. Or it may say, oh well, we're achieving something on one hand, you know, providing additional lots in the area so there's more houses, but on balance it's not the right outcome for the site because of all the constraints and the difficulties they're going to have going forward with the development, because it's not just about them selling the blocks, as I said before, it's about being able to develop those blocks appropriately for the future users and occupiers of those ones and also the neighbouring adjoining lots. With respect to how many people are involved in a planning application, it's huge, from obviously the administrative side around it, but as far as assessments go, we have senior planner dealing with it, we have development and engineers, environmental planners, in this instance also the environmental health officers because of the on-site wastewater. We also had discussions with other departments because this involves council land, so there was representation from the engineering services team, property services team, legal team. So there's a lot of people. The process is that the recommendation is put together, they work together looking at those different recommendations. It's the planner's responsibility to pull those together and make sure that they meet and adhere, and then it is checked by another officer, and as far as council reports go, then checked by me again as well, to ensure that the decision is right, and that's how the delegations at Kingborough work. No officer has single delegation to make a decision. Every decision is read by two people to make sure that we are consistent in our assessments, there's not errors in the assessments, and to make sure that we're getting the right outcome in accordance with the requirements of the planning scheme.
Okay. Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. Your answers have satisfied my concerns that we weren't sort of looking at this fairly, but given your responses, I'm happy to support the recommendation.
Further contributions? Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I need some questions answered as well, please. Thank you to the officers for their work. It's a complicated site, and I acknowledge that there were a number of well-intentioned I would say, fair-minded responses or concerns from the community. And unfortunately for the community, we just have to put on our dispassionate planning authority hat. So I just need some questions to be answered on that one. Was any refusal on the grounds of the removal of 10 high-value native trees without adequate avoidance of offsetting, was that a reason for refusal at all in any of the decisions made?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, that doesn't form any of the grounds of refusal, which are under Section 4
yep.
on page 35.
Fantastic, thank you. With regards to lot design requiring excessive earthworks and compromises solar access, could you comment on that? Because earthworks are common in coastal subdivisions. And future homes can adapt site-specific design. So how did we come to that word of excessive?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, the assessment is obviously with respect to the subject site, which is particularly steep. So to do the foundations for a dwelling or the services associated with the subdivision to service each of those lots, we need to consider how much works that they need to do because obviously there's certain requirements with respect to road design, driveway design, and then also the on-site wastewater is also another area of excavation in each of those lots. It will be significant given the fall and also the smallness is not a word, given the small size of each of those lots, it then makes it more compacted so that they will have to be able to fit into that space in their building envelope, being less able to spread that out across the site and meet the site requirements for an average size dwelling.
Thank you. If I can just continue, Mayor. Yeah, thank you.
So
the earthworks that need to be done to accomplish the site-specific design, is there any danger or any report around it that it would cause danger to the surrounding homes the way it needs to be conducted?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor. Ms. DeVries. The subdivision application was accompanied by a concept services report prepared to address the services designed in the drainage easement, particularly, well, for the access and also for the stormwater drainage, as you'll see on the northern sides of Lot 1, Lot 4 and Lot 5. These designs have been prepared by suitably qualified persons, and whilst the site works are significant, they do not advise that it would create risk to those adjoining properties.
Thank you. We live in a very long, hilly local government area, and if we were to decide what is excessive and what is not because it's a hill, we would be robbing individuals from their right to design and build the landscape, the urban landscape within the scheme. I'm concerned about this use of word excessive and the discretionary decision, because this, I believe, is a discretionary issue. Under LUPA, council may approve a proposal that meets performance criteria and furthers the objective of the scheme. It does seem to further the objective of the scheme. It doesn't break zoning intent. And you're just going to need to do some earthworks on a hilly site, especially if it's a coastal area, because you've got to hit rock bed. So are we certain that we've actually hit the right balance, on balance, in pointing out that excessive earthworks is being done because it's a hilly site? My question is, what is wrong with that to make it safe?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor. I think it's demonstrated the fact of how many applications we approve every year in our hilly topography, that we allow development to occur in our hilly topography all the time. So we take it with caution and concern. We do have landslip in large areas, including active landslip, large areas of our municipality, and so we take the advice of the professionals and the reports that come with that. We don't take it lightly. As mentioned by Mr. Vries, it wasn't fatal. Some of the services to go into that, But I would say, yes, we obviously do allow development to occur on heli sites all the time. Otherwise, we would have no development.
Councillor Antoli.
So my issue is then, why have we decided to single this particular development out? Because I'm not seeing from the designs, I'm not seeing from the reports that they're doing anything excessive.
Mr. Johnson.
Through you, Mayor. We were discussing issues with the drainage. There is a significant drain that an overland flow path drain that is to be established, proposed to be established along the rears of lot 1, 4, and 5. And you can see from the drawings that, and in the report, this drain will be quite wide, from 5 metres wide to 10 metres wide at the rear of lot 6, and in particularly along lot 5, it is not only 10 metres wide, it's also over 1.5 metres high. So it is quite excessive compared to other subdivisions where we don't have the same problems with overland flow and seepage flow, where areas are sewered and drained. So although it won't necessarily be a problem in terms of the structural, obviously it can be built with engineering standards, but it will certainly be excessive from an amenity aspect from the adjacent properties.
So are you saying that it's
Councillor
over...
Antoli.
Thank you. Are you saying it's an over-engineered solution for the site?
No, not over-engineered. It's that the width and length and height is because of the topography, and they're directing overland flow to the long access handles that run down to Ferry Road. We tried to get them. We suggested that they have a beneficiary of a drainage easement there at lot 5, which you can see on the plans. There's an existing drainage easement which we proposed to them that they should use it to minimise, well, to certainly reduce the amount of earthworks,
mm-hmm.
Because that's a natural low point, and hence why the drainage easement is there. The applicant investigated that. It's not a particularly wide easement, and the owners of that property, they had discussions with the owners, and the owners were very reluctant to let them access that easement, even though they have a legal right to. And after those investigations, they decided that they would use their land only, and because they're basically forcing overland flow from a natural low point to a point other than naturally, so they're bringing it back against the natural gradient of the land. That's the resultant significant earthworks to make that work.
So you're saying that the other owners are not giving access, so they're going about trying to create a solution without disturbing the neighbours.
Yes,
so whose fault is that?
Mr. Johnson.
Through you, Mayor. Well, I guess it's no one's fault. We did suggest at a number of occasions that they pursue a lot of investigations with the owners, and they did talk to them on a number of occasions, and they decided that it was getting too difficult and they preferred to just work with their own land, so they weren't going to get caught up in legal issues with access for an easement. And
well, I think that's a noble pursuit of the owner to go about and expedite a solution so that they're not going backwards. I don't understand why a council needs to penalise them for the lack of participation by the neighbours. The neighbours have their reasons. I'm not going to judge those reasons. The owner doesn't want to go through legal recourse. They're going to push ahead with an acceptable engineering solution. It's not their fault that in the eyes of council, the resultant earthworks will become excessive. You have a neighbour that doesn't want to play ball. So they need to go ahead and build this development. I don't understand why they should be penalised in council's eyes.
Is there a question? Councillor Andrew. Yeah,
am I right or wrong?
That's subjective. Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor. The applicants aren't being penalised. We've simply made an assessment against the planning scheme, which requires an assessment about the earthworks. It specifically says that, and with respect to the services as well. The owners of the neighbouring properties are not obliged to have to comply with that. It is simply a site constraint. So a proposal needs to be responsive to the constraints of the site. If they don't have the existing easements in place for them, then they have to work within the realms of their own property. And unfortunately, not every property can be developed to the desire or the number or the yield of an applicant. They need to make a site-responsive design to achieve that. And as mentioned earlier, this site probably could have some subdivision, but the yield that is proposed and the layout that is proposed isn't meeting the requirements of the planning scheme.
So if I may, Mayor, we've established that the engineering officer said that the actual drainage is excessive, and you're just telling me that there's too much of a yield. So I'm trying to understand how it is that a drain that is excessive can't cope with the yield that you're explaining, you're trying to talk about. It seems that from what I'm reading of the engineering reports, there's nothing wrong with the report, there's nothing wrong with the engineering plan, but we've taken the view that we think that their solution, which they seem to be forced to take because the neighbours are not willing to give access and they don't want to pursue it legally, is now excessive. So it seems to me they're actually doing the right thing by their plans to dig that amount of earthworks out to get a solution that won't result in flooding.
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, the reference to the yield relates to the whole assessment. This isn't just a single ground of refusal on excessive earthworks for the engineering. So there are several grounds, and it relates to the overall yield. So it's a number of things that are leading to that, that are causing the decision of a refusal recommendation. And the neighbours are not obligated or required or shouldn't be pressured into putting assets on their site that they don't wish to have on there.
Fair enough. And so they've gone ahead, I understand, from what you've just told us, to have a solution so as not to impinge on the neighbour. Is that correct?
Ms. Tullamore.
As already described, the works are within the site and not requiring new easements on the neighbouring properties.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Mayor. I'm not satisfied on this particular issue that council has actually hit the balance, and I think that it's actually been punitive towards the owner. And judging by the number of nodding heads around the room, I probably am not the only one that's thinking that. Can I ask a question about the second refusal point, which is the shared access for the five lots that they detract from the residential amenity? So the shared access, can someone explain what they meant by shared access and where on the actual figure one that access probably should be applied or should be placed?
Just going to take that.
Because I understand from the report the owner feels there's no space on their design for a shared access, and I'm wondering why they need to provide one given that it's almost a cul-de-sac and a lot of cul-de-sacs don't have shared access. Some do, some don't.
Mr. Johnson. Oh, no, it was already on.
Thank you.
For you, Chair, I'm not... could you please repeat the question?
Yes. Part of the refusal was, and I do think this is probably, the in my view, the more cogent or hard to defend by the applicant. Refusal is shared access for the five lots detracts from the residential amenity. It's you're quoting clause 12.5.1 P4 subset E.
Yes, through you, Mayor. So the length and of this the shared access is servicing five lots, proposed five lots. So that will result in a significant number of vehicular movements. It's a long access. It's a steep access, and the number of internal lots are serviced by this access are in fact in excess of what's permitted under the scheme.
So my understanding is, correct me if I'm wrong, that under 12.5.1 P4E, it allows for shared access as long as it does not unreasonably impact amenity. So in this case, the shared access is internal, it's screened, and it's consistent with the existing neighbourhood character. Is that not the case?
Mr. Johnson.
Through you, Mayor. Your comment about it being screened, I don't necessarily agree.
Well, it's going to be, it's screened as in it's screened from the road, it's hardly visible apart from those particular lots.
I don't follow how you say it is screened from the road.
It's separated from...
Sorry, Ms. Tullamore, with the microphone.
Sorry, you're referring to screened as in outside the site? So the amenity impacts being referred to as within the site, so the other lots within the site are affected. So in the grounds of refusal, it does list those lots that will be affected by that shared driveway, lots 3, 4, 5, 6 and 7.
How are they affected? What do you mean? I'm sorry.
By the traffic that is going down that shared lot. So I believe your question you are asking is as if the property's outside the subject site. Is that correct?
Yeah. We're probably almost coming to the same point. So the shared access is for the five properties. Are you saying that the access is too narrow for the traffic that those five properties will create? Is that what you're saying?
Sorry. Through you, Mayor, you'd asked a question about the impacts on amenity.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And now you're asking about the narrowness of the road.
By amenity, you're saying, correct me if I'm wrong, that it's not going to make easy use or proper use of the site. Is that not correct?
Through you, Mayor, the amenity is more than that. It's about the number of vehicles that are travelling in close proximity to the other lots because of the traffic that will be generated as a result of the use of that number of lots.
So you've got five lots, possibly 10 cars. They wouldn't all be travelling up and down the access lane all the time. What's the issue? I don't get it.
Mrs. DeVries.
Through you, Mayor. The performance criteria for this particular subdivision standard provides for a maximum of four lots only to utilise that access strip. as shown on the concept on the civil drawings, which are attached to the application plans to the report. The proposal is for 5 lots to utilise that access standard, which does not comply with the maximum amount allowed for within the performance criterion.
And would it comply if there was another access point, for example, that laneway that goes down to Ferry Road?
Mr. Freeze.
Thank you. If it was proposed to amend the design to reduce the amount of lots utilising this internal driveway that is proposed to extend off the head of the cul-de-sac down to those internal lots. If it was proposed to access one of those other lots in another way to reduce the number of lots using that shared driveway down to 4, it would comply with that standard. In that particular aspect of the performance criterion. However, the criterion has other specifics within it.
So we could make that a condition maybe on that particular point rather than a refusal?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, it'd be a redesign of the layout of the subdivision. It's not appropriate to condition that.
Do you think it's too difficult to make it a condition? It's too major a change.
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, there's quite a lot that goes into an assessment of a subdivision, whether it's with the civil layouts, the civil drawings, how it works, how the building envelopes work, access strips, and all the very lengthy assessment that is included in this report. So it isn't appropriate to just on a whim change the access as a condition. That condition is too onerous and probably too open-ended.
Too onerous, yep. Okay, thank you. Can I move on with a couple more?
Sure. There are other people I know wanting to speak, so if you can keep your questions concise, that would be appreciated because we've got very
Have
big
I not
agenda.
Been concise thus far?
Oh, we've spent a fair bit of time on it.
Yeah. Is that not my right as a member
it
of the
is,
Planning
but
Authority?
But I'm just pointing out we have a significant agenda tonight. We need to keep moving through as quickly as we can.
I hear you, but I won't be sped along for the rights of the actual developer as well as the community. So unless I've actually broken something out of the meeting rules procedure, I don't want to be sped along. As long as I'm asking the questions that I have to ask, if that's what it takes tonight for us to get it out in the open and get a proper outcome, then so be it.
That's your right. It was just some friendly advice I was providing.
Thank you. There's a comment about single access road and a bushfire area poses safety concerns. Clearly bushfire is a big issue for us, but there's a certified bushfire hazard management plan. It's been submitted. Is that plan inadequate? Does it make mention that there is something inadequate about the single access point, given that a lot of cul-de-sacs have only one access in and out?
Ms. Tullamore.
Sorry, just seeking some clarity on it. So there was a bushfire report with respect to it, but this was to do with the access under the provisions of the zone. So not just the code, but now the zone. That's where the grounds of refusal related to ground 3 is related.
So you're quoting clause 12.5.2p1 as the... Is that what you're quoting as a reason for a refusal?
Three, Mayor, I didn't quote anything, but it is written in ground 3, 12.5.2.
Yeah, that's what I've got here, 12.5.2p1. So are we saying that says that we are, that the single access, so basically the bushfire report seems to indicate that access is adequate. Are we using bushfire access as a point of refusal?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, the zone, if you go to page 17 and 18 of the report, outlines what the performance criteria are. So the application didn't meet the acceptable solution, which means you must default to the performance criteria. And if you look at P1, it has several outcomes, but letter J, multiple escape routes 17. Are provided if it, in a bushfire-prone area.
on page 17, is that what you're saying?
Top of page 18. Yep, so it starts on page 17 and goes over, it's the mm-hmm. last dot point there, just above proposal.
So I'm looking at the reasons for refusal as opposed to that particular... What are you trying to... Sorry, I'm trying to miss... I've missed the point, Ms. Tylemore, that you're making from the top of 18.
Ms. Tylemore, through you, Mick, ground of refusal number 3 specifically calls up that code, that zone, 12.5.2,
yeah.
P1, and it's related to letter J, which is in the performance criteria.
Multiple escape routes are provided in a bushfire-prone area. Is that correct? Is that what you're referring to?
Yes,
that is correct.
Okay, and because there's only one escape route, you're using that as reason for refusal on that point?
Through you, Mayor, yes, it's included as listed in the grounds of refusal.
And does the actual bushfire management report also back that up, that another escape route should be provided, or does it seem to indicate it's adequate?
Through you, Mayor, the bushfire report didn't recommend that it be refused or a decision could be made on it based on that, but the bushfire report is under a separate section.
So does the same section refuse cul-de-sacs? Does it prohibit cul-de-sacs from having one access point? Because this is what this is.
So if you look at page 18, in the second dot point, in the second sentence of that, it says the proposed subdivision road terminates in a cul-de-sac and does not provide a second vehicle escape route to another route or facilitate a pedestrian escape route by way of a walking through the subdivision. So that's the issue. So when it's in what it's saying, if it's in a bushfire-prone area that this is, then it needs to be able to demonstrate multiple escape routes, either by vehicle or pedestrian.
So my point is, do we have cul-de-sacs all over Kingborough, new and old, that don't have more than two escape routes? More than one escape route.
Well, I live in a cul-de-sac and I've got vehicle access and I've got a walkway that I can go
yeah,
down.
Yeah, of course,
and
a
there
walkway.
Are I'd say that that is more commonplace.
All right, are we talking about walkways or are we talking about vehicular escape routes?
No, of a walkway. That was the... Or facilitate a pedestrian escape route by way of a walkway through the subdivision is the last sentence in that second
paragraph.
Yeah,
it actually talks about... It does not provide a second vehicular escape. We are talking about a road.
Yeah, or facilitate. You're leaving out the rest of that sentence.
Or facilitate a pedestrian escape.
Yeah.
So... Is that alleyway that we were discussing before that goes down to Ferry Road, is that a pedestrian escape? That thin little alleyway, is that a pedestrian path or...?
Ms. Tolemore.
Through you, Mayor, can I get clarification? Is it referred to the private driveway accesses to Ferry Road?
What was the question?
Reference to an alleyway, which...
Yeah, it's just my wording. It's just that that access point down to Ferry Road. It's a long, thin... It's hard to read on the actual designs here. On page 6...
There are two accesses down to Ferry Road, and they're both private.
Okay, there are two axes. And is that... It's at the top of the diagram there, figure 1. Is that you're referring to?
Ms. Tylemore.
Sorry, can you repeat the question?
Figure 1 on page, at the top of page 6, has a strip bordered in red, and it's hard to read in the diagram, but goes down to Ferry Road. Is that not an access to Ferry Road? Or what is that?
Through you, Mayor. If they're just internal accesses, they're not public accesses, so the other lots can't use them.
Why is that? Is there like a fence in the middle or something? Or what?
It's because it's private land. They're private lots.
I think what Ms. Tylemore is saying is in the event of an emergency, it doesn't give you the right to go walking over your neighbour's property.
Yeah, I'm trying to understand. It doesn't. What I'm looking at here, are we able to pull up? Can council officers pull up the top of page 6? I'm wondering if we're not talking about the same thing. Top of page 6. There's a diagram, figure 1.
You're not going to see much on there.
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Morton. can you just pull that down a fraction? Can you circle that line, Miss Morton, just with your cursor there? That's going to, yeah, that's the one. I'm talking about that section there. Are you saying that that's a separate lot? Or is that part, or is that an access point to Ferry Road from those lots?
One is part of lot 4 and the other one is part of lot 1.
Right, so it's...
Oh, 5.
Okay, I didn't get that from the design. So it's a weird extension of those lots, a thin extension. It's not actually an access point.
Mrs. DeVries.
Thank you, through you, Mayor. So those access strips to Ferry Road, they are proposed to be a part of proposed Lot 4 and Lot 5. However, they are not proposed to be developed to provide for vehicular access. They're proposed to be used solely for the purpose of drainage easement only.
I see.
The vehicular access to Lot 4 and Lot 5 is solely from the shared access that will extend from the proposed subdivision road past Lot 3, Lot 7, Lot 5.
Okay, thank you. I do appreciate your patience, and look, this is a multi-million dollar development. There's a lot on the table for these particular people, and there also is for the community, and it is unusual for us to see a reason for refusal from council. So, you know, I've had a lot of people come to me personally about their concerns for and against, and I wanted to have some of those questions answered. Otherwise, there are legal repercussions for us if we don't. So... I'm satisfied based on the answers that I've received that grounds for refusal is fair and reasonable, so I'll be voting in favour.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Councillor Street, you are next.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, in reviewing this, and I thank Council staff for their work, with respect to the grounds of refusal and the... just so that I get them in the right order. Look, 1, 3 and 4, I could come up with reasons why with respect to the clauses in 1, 3 and 4, I could find that the development application complied. The one that I struggled with... and I think it's the fatal one, is the recommended reason for refusal, number 2. I just have a couple of questions, though, just to make sure that I entirely understand. And before I ask them, I need you to understand, I'm not trying to trap anybody. I just... there is a reference in the scheme and in this particular clause in 12.5.1 to the rear of a lot. In these circumstances, what is the rear of this lot? It's sort of important because if there's no other reasonable way to develop the rear of the lot, then the internal driveway structure might be permissible. If there is another reasonable way of developing the rear of the lot, then it's clearly not, and that's really the end of the story. So what is the rear of this lot?
This is DeVries.
Thank you, through you, Mayor. So the proposed subdivision obviously includes the council land in the application, but it is of two current internal lots which currently have access strips frontage to Ferry Road, and they also share a boundary with the council owned land as well. There are other subdivision design options for this land, we believe, that would allow for subdivision.
So are we saying that the southern end of those two lots then is the rear of the lots?
That is correct.
Because, I mean, if that's the case, then in my view it's basically fatal to the development application, because what that section of the scheme says... Sorry.
Mayor, I can't hear the councillor.
Is an internal lot must satisfy all of the following.
Sorry, Councillor Street, some people are having trouble hearing you, so if you can be closer to the microphone.
So 12.5.1p4c says the lot constitutes the only reasonable way to subdivide the rear of an existing lot. Well, the difficulty that I now have is, well, that internal driveway structure is entirely designed to develop the front of the lot. Because really what we're looking at is access to the lots that are proposed for the northern, in terms of 4, 5 and 6, they're in the northern portion, which is actually the front of the lot, is it not?
Ms. Tyler-Moore.
Through you, Mayor, so it's a subdivision of two of the lots. It's the council lot and it's the subject site lot, if you like.
Yes.
It's great how the scheme's written in some ways, but obviously it's referring...
No definition of rear, I know.
No, yeah. But it's really talking about an internal lot. So you're talking about a battle axe, so where you just typically subdivide and they've just sort of used those words, the rear of the lot. So you end up with internal lots because you're developing the rear of the lot.
Yeah.
So that's really what it's referring to. So I think to get up caught up in semantics of the rear of the lot's probably not overly helpful. They're subdividing that whole lot and not retaining anything at the front. And then it's overcomplicated by the fact that it's two lots and that the council lot is not a road lot, it is a lot proper. So, well, it's just subdividing all the way down the middle of it and then the other lots are existing there at the back, resulting in battle axe blocks. And they're keeping the house at lot 3, which is obviously causing another constraint on site to work around to then be able to fit the lots and all the requirements for each lot to have the building envelopes and be developable, creating further internal lots.
Yeah.
That makes sense?
Yes, yeah.
Yep.
Not to mention the fact that you've then got the impact on the lot to the south of having not only a public road constructed but then a vehicular access that then goes to 5 other lots running along their northern boundary, which they wouldn't unreasonably have never expected. In terms of what's marked on the plan on page 6 as being existing rights of way, as far as I could tell, they're actually part of the freehold property of those two lots that are to be subdivided. Is there any reason why, and depending on how you say the rear of the property is there any reason why the northern end of the property couldn't be developed using that access to Ferry Road?
Yeah, Ms. Tyler-Moore.
Through you, Mayor, yes, they could develop lots 4 and 5 with access to Ferry Road, which there were conversations with them about that as an alternative. And then they could actually reduce the number
of... And potentially others as well. I mean, if it was redesigned, then...
Oh, there's, many ways to divide land. And I guess also if they reduce the overall number of lots, then they could also have proper frontage to the new road at the end of the cul-de-sac rather than having to have internal lots there as well. So there's a few different ways, but maintaining 7 lots is where it's becoming problematic. So certainly they can, as I've already said tonight, it's certainly possible to subdivide this site. It's not impossible to develop the site or subdivide the site. It just needs to be the right response to the constraints.
Yeah. Look, as I suggested at the outset, with respect to reasons for refusal 1, 3 and 4, I could make favourable arguments for the development application meeting the clauses referred to. However, in respect of clause 12.5.1, I do not think the development application complies with the performance criteria, and for that reason alone I'd be voting against the issue of a permit.
Thank you. Are there any further contributions? I'll ask the Deputy Mayor to sum up. Nope. Done. Okay. I'm going to put the recommendation. It's as printed in the agenda, so it's a recommendation for refusal. It was moved by Councillor Gladewright and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against? The motion is carried unanimously. So the planning session of the planning authority now adjourns, and the open session of council recommences at 6:50 p.m. We're now on page 72, petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions still being actioned, and there were no petitions received in the last period at the time the agenda was compiled. I'm going to propose that we slightly reorder the agenda because I suspect that sometime in the next half hour we probably would like a comfort break. So rather than starting the budget item now, I'm going to suggest we hold that over, we go to page 150 and do the report there, and perhaps the second one as well. So we do the road names and the communications and engagement policy, and then we have a break, and after we've had a quick break, we'll come back and do the budget. I think that'll be more productive. So I'm looking for a mover and a seconder for proposed new road names and extension to existing road at Huntingfield with a recommendation on page 154. Do I have a mover? Got a mover in Councillor Midgley and a seconder in Councillor Bain. Councillor Midgley.
Yes, I support the report as written. Note it's a little bit more complicated than it has been for road names prior, but I have no other comments.
Thank you. Any further discussion? No? Okay, I'm going to put the recommendation moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Bain. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. Now on page 159, Communications and Engagement Policy and Framework Review with a recommendation on the following page, and I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in Councillor Midgley and a seconder in Councillor Fox. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, I am happy to move the Communications and Engagement Policy and Framework Review. My first thought is that it's a lot of documents to come to Council in regards to the policy and the framework. I sort of see the framework as a bit more of internal operations. I'm happy with the changes that have been proposed, and it's great to see, I guess, a bit of growth in that area, if I'm correct in saying this. In our staff, it's a really important part of council communications and engagement, and with the growing need for social media and our response there and communications, that's just really one aspect. And then of course the community engagement and the consultation and the framework in regards to how we do that is outlined really clearly. We know why we do things, we know why we choose to engage, and we have a framework that supports making that decision. And it's, an important part across all council, because we are the council closest to the people, and people want to have their say about things. So I support everything that is in there. My only thought around that is we have our LGBTQIA+, policy framework action plan, and I guess I'd really, as part of that action plan, was around a lens around council documents and communication, and that was an area that hadn't been one of the actions from that framework that hadn't been addressed, I guess, and I think it'd be good then just to look at that action plan along our engagement frameworks as well. That was just one comment that I had around that. But yeah, that's all. Happy to support the changes.
Thank you very much. Any further discussion? Look, I had gone through this in detail earlier, found a few typos and things that needed to be cleaned up, and much to my horror, now that I'm back in the document, my changes haven't been saved, but they're only minor typos. There was the title of one of the directors was missing. There were a couple of other grammatical things. So they can be cleaned up and finalised. I don't think that's going to prevent us from passing it now. But I did just want to say that one of the things that we learned from the consultation that we did on the budget was that we asked the community what it was, the top three things that we did well. And we had a chart, and I think it was number four came out that people said that we communicated with the community really well. So I think that is, of course, great credit to the communications team, which we have, and which has, as Councillor Midgley has identified, have grown over the last couple of years, and that's been a necessary thing, because to have only one person being responsible for communications across the whole of council was obviously very challenging. So we now have a team of people who do it very effectively. So it's great credit to them, but also it obviously this is the framework that underpins that engagement, and so this is a very important document. So happy to endorse it. And Councillor Midgley, I'm assuming you don't want to sum up?
Well, just a quick couple of words, if that's okay.
Sure.
Just what you said, Mayor, in regards to that, yes, the staff has grown, but compared to other councils, like it's actually a really small small amount. When I worked at the City of Hobart, the engagement team there was, you know, massive. And you had a project in engineering, you could go to an engagement team to go and do, and we, you know, the walking and talking around the roads. What we see is our staff actually taking on the engagement role that other councils have. So it's something to keep in mind when we think of ourselves, you know, a tight, lean council. These are some of the areas that we, you know, we have to kind of keep at a minimum. And when the community says that it is a really important thing and that we do it well, you know, we've got to keep doing that well. And so what, and we do it well with the, you know, really the minimum of staff that we have in this area. So I would like to congratulate them well. And it's great that we've got the IAP2 model. I did that training about 10 years ago, and it's a fantastic community engagement model. So it's great that we can implement that as well.
Thank you. I'm going to put the recommendation now. It's moved by Councillor Midgley and seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. I'm going to seek some guidance whether you want to do one more before we take our break. Yep, there's nodding all around. Okay, so we're now on page 217, Kingborough Skate Park Facilities, with a recommendation on page 218. And I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. I've got a mover in Councillor Dean and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. Councillor Dean.
Thanks, Mayor. This actually was one of the more, exciting and enjoyable reads when it comes to reports for me. I think there's obviously just a bit of background. I can't recall exactly. It might have been a state government grant that allowed us to pursue this, or it wasn't. I don't know. However the money came about, I can't really recall, but we did engage a consultancy firm to look at our skate park facilities in Kingborough, as this was a finding out of our sport and rec strategy from 2024. So it does a pretty comprehensive job of reviewing the skate parks that we do have and also talking about the potential for a high-class or high-quality facility as a new build. It does a good job of pointing out that we don't have a spare 750 grand at this minute, but it is an aspirational thing that this municipality, I think, does at some point really need to consider. However, I think the most useful part of the report, if you've read it, is just, I guess, the review of the safety aspects. Embarrassing to share that I ended up in hospital a few years ago with stitches in the back of my head. I got very lucky because I mistakenly thought I could skateboard better than I can. So it is important to keep our skate park safe. And as you can see from the photos, it is like when you see the kids going crazy down there, and there are cracks and things, you do think, geez, this isn't just about making sure that they're fun, but we obviously need to make sure it's safe. So it is a really good report. I like to think that we will prioritise those safety things in future budgets to make sure that they are kept up to standard. One day I'd like to be sitting here and discussing the possibility for a really high-class facility for us moving forward. So I'm happy to commend the report.
Thank you. Before I go to, I've got Councillor Midgley and Councillor Antoli. I just wanted to make a comment at this point in case anybody wanted to take this up. Look, I agree with the comments that you've made. This funding came about because we'd received a grant to look at the development of a sea pool, and then people in the community told us they didn't want a sea pool. We were a bit crazy for thinking that they'd want to swim down at the beach. And so we put the money into this. And I think it's been a very good report. I think, as you say, we need to ensure that we're looking at the safety. There's some minor works that can be done to upgrade, particularly the Taruna one and the Blackmans Bay one. That is very important. I have some significant concerns about locating this at Drew Point because of the lack of public transport to there. So the CEO and I were looking today at the bus timetables and the access, and for a young person to get a bus to here, particularly on a Sunday, I mean, it's predominantly going to be used after schools and Saturdays and Sundays. If you look at the Sunday bus timetable, there's only one bus every 2 hours, and then it's a nearly 1 kilometre walk to get to the location of the skate park proposed at Drew Point. So I would not like... I want us to note the report, but I would like to see us perhaps remove the words that the facility be located at Drew Point in Margate, because I think there are other areas that have been identified in this report that we should consider that would be far easier for young people to get to. You know, skateboarding and e-scooters and all that, and scooters are great for all ages, dangerous for some people, but we need to accept that a lot of people who will be using this don't have access to cars because they don't have their licence, and so public transport is going to be pretty important. So I'll just throw that out there now in case anybody wants to consider an amendment so that we take this forward. So next on my list is Councillor Midgley and then Councillor Antoli.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. Yes, I... would like to see that removed as well. I support that. And I guess, thanks, Councillor Dean. I think for most of us who have kids, definitely have spent some time at a skate park in the municipality. They all go through that kind of stage of skating or scooting. And
You were going to say you spent time in a hospital ED because of it.
Well, and that as well. I can't remember. I've had a few hospital things. There's probably a skate park in there. But yeah, if I was to come back again in life, I'd love to be a pro skater. Well, not a pro skater, but I'd love to be able to skate. I spent my 80s watching skate movies with my brother in the old pools and things like that. But yeah, so Drew Point, I kind of think, like, when we have these reports, I wonder, like, why do consultants come up with these kind of grand ideas without kind of looking at that full picture? I've personally once, in my first year in council, tried to get to an event in Drew Point by bus, and I couldn't. And I had to, get there another way. Walk and ride and bring people for lifts and all that kind of thing. So I absolutely take your point. But, yeah, why don't consultants think about that?
It was part of the matrix in the report. I read through the report today and it was taken into consideration, but I don't know if they really understand the local
needs. And I guess when we are going out doing, we've seen this with other reports like this, the Huntingfield Shared Path was a classic example. Anyway, I'll just say for the future, it'd be great to walk alongside more when they're coming up with that recommendation. And I guess it comes to what sort of consultation did they do? Like, they did a bit with community members, or speak to any local school groups or anything like that? Like, what else happened, I guess, in regards to developing some of these ideas and concepts?
It's just me.
Through you, Mayor, I'll make a couple of comments. The consultants developed a matrix comprising of 16 criteria, and access to public transport and access to urban areas was one of those criteria. In relation to Drew Point, the Drew Point ticked the box in 14 out of the 16, and public transport was one of the crosses. So it was certainly a consideration. The report does note that the consultant's preferred location is the Kingborough Sports Precinct, but as we know, we've run out of room there. So Drew Point is very much, in the eyes of the consultant, the next best available location in terms of all of the sites that they assessed. In terms of the consultation, there is one of the reports... does contain the consultation that was undertaken And you will note that the consultants do recommend more intense community consultation if and when we get to the point of developing a facility.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley, you did, in the recommendation it does point to further community consultations.
Yes. Yep. Thank you. I also, just the notes and in the report in regards to the things that need, you know, fixing and upgrades and all that kind of thing, is there anything at all in the next budget? I guess it's, this report wasn't in time, but maybe internally they saw some of that, but I'm just wondering, was there any like a really immediate standout actions that from this report staff have identified that, wow, that needs to be fixed now?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, yes, the most urgent items will be addressed as part of our annual operating maintenance budget for reserves. And then you're correct, it was too late to get additional funding submissions in, but that will come for future budget. But certainly any safety issue that has been identified as urgent will be prioritised and done as part of our operating annual maintenance budget.
Great, thank you. And I guess just overall, you know, these reports are fantastic and they're so a much-loved community facility. It reminds us that when we're thinking about our budget later on, that, you know, we don't walk away with just a couple of things. There's often a really long list and a bigger picture that will actually have a really big cost to council as well. Mm-hmm. And the community has been crying out. I'm sure directors would know that, you know, community has been asking for a really large skate facility for Kingborough as well. And it is that voice of young people and children that don't often kind of get prioritised sometimes over like people who attend Kingborough community forums and things like that. So I think when we, you know, move on to that budget paper later on, it's good to remember, yeah, this is in that mix as well.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. You took the words out of my mouth with your assessment. I personally found the fact that it was a key selection criteria. And they went for that as a recommendation, or I can't remember. I believe the report went for that as a recommendation. Is that correct, the convict report, that Drew Point be chosen?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor. That's correct.
Yeah.
The brief given to the consultant was to assess a range of options and actually recommend, in their professional opinion, the preferred location.
Yeah.
And their recommendation is Drew Point.
And did they, Mr. Smee... sort of, because I didn't read it. I didn't see it. Did they actually acknowledge that, yeah, this is our preferred choice, but a bit of a problem if there's no transport there, but you guys could fix it by lobbying Metro or doing this or doing that?
Well, they didn't say that, but they ranked it and it was clear that it had transport issues.
Yeah, okay. Because my fear is, of course, is, you know, no matter how much of an effort we put into it, if it's underutilised because of transport, it becomes a white elephant. Yep. And rather than just reputational damage and fiscal waste of money, it's not utilised. So, yeah, I'm happy to acknowledge that we should probably word the amendment differently, and I'm happy to move that.
So my suggestion would be that we just remove the words at Drew Point in Margate and replace them with in Kingborough. Is the cleanest solution,
I'm happy to.
And then it continues on subject to budget.
I'm happy to move that.
So if you're happy to move that, if hopefully it's acceptable to the mover and the seconder, so Councillor Dean is indicating yes, so is Councillor Midgley, so we don't need to have, thank you very much, we don't need to have an amended motion to debate. So that is now the recommendation, high-quality facility in Kingborough as the change. So thank you for that.
Yeah, and just to finalise, I appreciate council officers' response to the safety. We will prioritise it. It won't be put on the shelf. We acknowledge it and we're on it. So that's great.
And look, if any future state governments want to give us $750,000 for a skate park, we'll put our hands up for that now. All right, I'm going to put... Councillor Dean, did you... Oh, sorry, Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to point out that Blackmans Bay Skate Park is the first one that was built in Kingborough. And the design of it was really a compromised design because it was a spoon drain for flooding events that occurred regularly in this site. And I'm concerned that some of the issues that relate to this, the maintenance, but also the size, the extent of this development, they're not really purpose-built for a skate park, and whether we should, in fact, review the entire design and do a rebuild in the future. I'm aware that it's a compromise and it's not necessarily suiting both functions. And I don't know if the consultant was aware of that or if current staff would have been aware of that, but I think it's something that deserves investigating.
Mr. Smee, did you want to comment on that?
Yes, through you, Mayor. Your staff were aware that the Blackmans Bay Skate Park has been designed with the fact that it is an overland water flow in mind, and you're absolutely correct. What we have at Blackmans Bay is compromised by that fact, and it does compromise further development of that particular skate park because of the limitations of it being an overland water flow in the event of flood. To answer the question around, you know, should we be reviewing that design, that wasn't part of the brief for the consultants. They purely looked at the safety aspects, but in assessing the site, they have dismissed it as the site for a high-quality facility in Kingborough because of those limitations.
Councillor Dean, did you want to sum up? No, I'm going to put the recommendation then moved by Councillor Dean and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. I think that looks like a good time to have a break. If we could all be back by 7:22, that gives you 10 minutes, please. That would be appreciated. And for those watching at home, just bear with us while we just have a quick comfort break before we come back for the remaining agenda items. Thank you for your patience. Sorry, I've been watching too much Formula One. Okay, welcome back. Thank you very much. And to those who are watching along at home, thank you for your patience while we just have a quick comfort break. We are now moving back to page 72, Operational and Capital Budgets and Rates Resolution for 2025-26, with a recommendation on page 78. And I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in, is that a mover in Councillor Midgley and a seconder in Councillor Fox. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, this is a really important matter that we're discussing tonight. And firstly, I'd like to thank staff for presenting this budget in a clear, plain language report. It really helps to show where Council stands financially and explains the reasoning behind the proposed rate increase. But before I get into more of my contribution and questions, I'd like to share a few stories because at the heart of this, it's about our community. I've just got glasses, so I don't know whether to wear them or not wear them. There's rarely a day that goes by where I'm not having a conversation with someone in our municipality, and almost always people tell me how much they love living here. At the same time, they share ideas and suggestions about how things could be improved. Just a few weeks ago, I joined members of the bike committee for a ride along some of our fantastic new paths. There were lots of wow moments, real appreciation for the work done, but also a growing list of things that need maintenance. At the sports centre recently, in heavy rain, I saw buckets catching water from a leaking roof, a roof that was built in 1979, and the roof is in our list for replacement, but once again, it's been deferred in this year's budget. Over the weekend, I came across a post from that a member of Spring Farm had written asking for some play equipment for the playground. Only a few months ago, Councillor Bain, I hope that's okay to say Councillor Bain, was advocating on behalf of residents in this area for shade for the playground. And I'm pleased to say the shade sort of structure is included in this budget. But now there is ask for more play equipment for this area. Tonight, as we spoke about before, we looked at a skate park review. These suggestions don't come for free. We have heaps of shovel-ready projects, and then I'm sure staff would love to put so many of them up, but we're often constrained about what we can put up And these requests, you know, don't just are made up. They're long-term, sometimes significant proposals, and they've come from community requests. As the report says, council is responsible for managing more than $1 billion worth of assets. Maintaining those assets and keeping them operating and planning for their renewal is a huge part of our budget. This budget tonight is more than just a rate rise. I'm optimistic that we can all have an open mind and understand council's needs right now and support the recommendations in this report. In making my decision, it hasn't been easy. I've attended the budget workshops, I've had meetings one-on-one with the CEO and the CFO. I've read the community consultation, and I really thank all those members of the public who contributed their ideas. I've asked questions I needed to and listened to the responses. Last week, we heard from Dion Lester from LGAT, and he said that councils are dealing with skyrocketing costs while managing billions in community infrastructure. Construction materials alone have gone up 30% in just 3 years. So maybe it's time we need to start advocating more strongly to state and federal government so the burden doesn't always fall back on our residents. Our council has absolutely felt the impact of rising costs, and we continue to face serious financial challenges. The Auditor General reviews local government each year using a set of KPIs, and we've been told that Kingborough is not meeting all of them. In particular, operating deficits year after year pose a real risk. One benchmark says council should have at least 3 months' worth of operating cash on hand. That's another target we're not currently meeting. If we move to lower the proposed rate rise tonight, going against the advice of our council's financial experts, we move even further away from meeting those benchmarks. The modelling that we've seen in workshop shows an 8% increase this year and another 8% proposed for next year. If we don't go ahead with that 8% now, and with council elections on the horizon, we may not see it next year either. And this has a cumulative impact. Mayor, I've just got a question in regards to that. I'm wondering if staff could comment on the Auditor General KPIs and the consequences of not adopting the proposed 8% rate increase tonight.
Mr. Spinks.
Thank you, Mayor, through you. So the Auditor General every year does a review or a report to Parliament following the audits of all state entities and comments upon any findings arising out of those audits and also financial performance. So Volume 3 of that report relates to the local government sector. They've been producing this report for many years now. And in the report for 2023-2024 financial year, Kimbra is noted again as not meeting all the required benchmarks, so we continue to record underlying operating deficits, and as we know, we need to be as a minimum breaking even. It's a much better financial practice. And the other one, as mentioned, is the cash position. So we're actually in a position whereby our commitments from cash, so our reserves and carry forwards and these kinds of things, actually exceed our cash balance. So we're not meeting that minimum 3 month operating cash on hand criteria. In that light, the annual rate increase is a very challenging task for council. So we're in that deficit situation, we have low cash balances, we're in a rising cost environment, and once again, the proposed budget for next year flags a fairly significant lift in total costs of around 6.3%. And so trying to balance all of those things and move out of deficit into operating surpluses, but at the same time trying to keep rate increases as low as possible is difficult. But it's trying to balance all of those things. We've come up with the recommendation for a rate increase of 8%.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. I'd like to move to the topic of strategic asset management and noting that we've had a significant backlog of asset write-offs that need to be processed, and this has had a massive impact on our budget. I'll be honest, I haven't been comfortable with some of the surprises we've had in regards to this. I guess the asset management surprises and the work that we need to do. But I've been told from staff that there's always unknowns, positive or negative, and write-offs are part of that. I've got a couple of questions relating to that, Mayor. Just wondering how we're going to improve our asset management for the future, especially around our write-offs and forecasting. And do we have any early predictions for the next financial year's asset position?
Mr. Stewart.
Yeah, thank you. And through you, Mayor. Look, as we know that there's work to do around our strategic asset management planning, that's something that we have been really clear about through this budget process, that there is further work to be done and the importance of that document in terms of, I guess, modelling our long-term financial management across the organisation. Taking your point around, I guess, the asset write-offs that we've had in the tail end of this financial year, we have been going through a program of significant capitalisation across the asset program that we've had previously. So, if memory serves me rightly, over $30 million worth of work in progress has been capitalised. At the back end of that, there is always going to be some write-offs, but I guess from a councillor perspective, I can understand that that sort of has come out of left field a little bit. In terms of the way going forward, we need to obviously do that work around what our asset portfolio looks like, the lifespans, the conditions, and the time that that our various assets will reach the end of their useful life and we'll need to move into replacement. And that replacement lens is really important because that's what you depreciate your assets for. And I guess that's the planned part of an asset program when you have new or upgrade type assets as well. That is additional cost that you put onto your books. So we need to understand what our current asset portfolio looks like through its lifespan, and then we're in a better position as a council to make decisions about when we might choose to either upgrade assets. Sometimes we won't have a choice because, you know, weather events and things like that mean that we need to increase the level of service with different asset types like stormwater, or alternatively we might have a choice about bringing a new asset on if it's going to serve a community good. This is the sort of planning that we will undertake, and we'll be doing that over the next 12 months to make sure that we're in a much stronger position next year coming into this sort of process, so that councillors have really good information at your disposal. That's an ongoing journey, though. It's not a set and forget. It's not a one-time piece of work, so that'll be an ongoing process beyond that as we continue to refine and further enhance our strategic asset management planning.
Thank you. Midgley. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. It's great to see that we are going to take some serious action in this area. So just back to the rate rise. Over my time at council, I have supported increases at CPI in my early years, which were very much the flavour. But staff back then also recommended higher. But I now realise those decisions have contributed to our current financial position. We've made steady progress toward a sustainable operating surplus, but we're not there yet. I've also come to understand how much a small change can add up over time. Staff have told me, and I've seen it in the modelling, that even a 1% difference now can have a cumulative impact over the 10-year period. So I'm wondering if tonight we were to look at, say, because we have, and I'm sharing this because in the workshops we've had these discussions about different proposals than what is put in our report tonight. I'm wondering if we did, say, look at a proposal for a reduction, say 1% reduction in what is currently proposed, around $440,000, what would that mean for future budgets?
Mr. Spinks.
Through you, Mayor. So a 1% reduction in the rate increase, as we've heard, is around $440,000. What the impact that has, of course, is it's not just a one-year reduction. So that unless we in a future year or years take offsetting actions to sort of recoup that foregone revenue, the issue just compounds each year. So it's a loss of revenue each and every year from here forward. So if we reduced, just for argument's sake, the rate increase by 1%, it's not a $440,000 decision. Over the life of the financial plan, it's actually around about an $8 million decision. So there'll be $8 million of foregone revenue and $8 million less cash on hand at the end of that 10-year period. As I say, an alternative would be to recoup it in later years, but
As we've heard, 2627 is already premised in our modelling on an 8% also, which is an election year or leading into a local government election year, and subsequent years to that are sort of around the mid-fives, also 5%. So if we don't take offsetting action, as I say, it's about an $8 million loss of revenue and cash.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. As I said earlier, people love living in Kingborough. When we talk about rates, maybe we need to reframe them. That's how I think about them. I think about them as the best value tax we pay. We pay GST, we don't really even notice, we get our...
Time.
Thank you. Oh, can I ask for an extension?
Yeah, how much longer would you like? 2 minutes? 3 minutes?
Maybe three.
3 minutes. Yes. So I need somebody to move. So it's moved by the Deputy Mayor, seconded by Councillor Fox. Question is that Councillor Midgley be allocated an additional 3 minutes. All those in favour? Five. Against? Motion is carried. You have 3 more minutes.
Thank you. So, yes. That's okay. Maybe we need to, reframe them. Every day we see the benefits right here. Our parks, our roads, our community services, our turf. They support well-being now and they support well-being into the future. The budget isn't extravagant and staff have done a great work across all the departments in council to focus on what truly needs to be done while balancing strategic objectives, risk and community expectations. And we also need to think about, and the report was in regards to the staff, some areas around staff budget, and we need to ensure that we are an attractive council, that we retain our employees, because we know that there are costs associated with hiring staff and things like that. So we want to make sure that we're a council where we retain our staff and it's a great place to work. Mayor, I'm wondering, and I guess the community would really like to know as well, is how this budget process has identified savings and efficiencies and how we're planning for that financial sustainability for the future. But it's more really in that is around, how can I be absolutely reassured that we have scrutinised this budget thoroughly, made savings where possible, but still actually meeting those demands?
A CEO.
Through you, Mayor. through the budget creation process, we've been looking really hard for budget savings that can be achieved through this process. So through the executive, through our management cohort, we've posed the challenge to look for every dollar, look under every rock, and really make sure that the budget that we're putting up is going to be fit for purpose and going to be delivering on the service levels that we deliver now and that our communities expect from us. So there's always an inherent tension, as you've outlined through your, your articulation of the budget between the service levels that we create but the rating impact that has on our community. And that's something that we've held really close through the budget creation process and certainly with the workshops that we've had with council, listening to the community feedback that we had from this budget process as well. We've heard all those voices and tried to come up with a balanced budget, but one that's actually looked for savings and opportunities there. Councillors will note that additionally within the budget, there's a few areas of targeted investment within the budget. The reason for that is sometimes you have to spend a little bit of money to be able to drive operational efficiencies and savings. So that's an important lens that we're taking to this as well. If we don't invest in change, then we're never going to achieve change. So there are some targeted investments within this budget which help us further develop that program of savings across this organisation to make sure that we're as efficient and as effective as we can be as an organisation to drive that that savings program into the future and make sure that we're going to be delivering upon the Kingborough Council that our community wants and expects from this organisation. So that's, I guess, what we're doing. In terms of the your question around financial sustainability, that side of things, that's, I guess, achieved through that robust financial planning, making sure that we both, from an operating perspective and from a capital, and coming back to your earlier question around the strategic asset management plan, making sure that we've got the right inputs into the equation, and that over time we're transitioning out of the deficit situation that we're in as an organisation. As has been I guess, identified and spoken about through this session already, operating in underlying deficit is not a financially sustainable way to continue to operate. Certainly from financial benchmarks, that's not something that is certainly encouraged in the long term for organisations. So making sure that we're moving forward out of that deficit environment, accumulating an improved cash position so that we can meet those financial benchmarks that were spoken about earlier, as well as being able to fund future renewal work that would be identified through that strategic asset management planning and that long-term program is really important about this as well. So it's always going to be a long burn going from where we're at now to a financially sustainable future, but that's the program that staff are trying to set this organisation on.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. And I guess I'm asking these questions and articulating these so that I guess the community members can really understand the current financial state that we are in. But in saying that as well, there are some great highlights from this budget, as there always is, even though we do have financial constraints, because people put submissions in and they want to see some action. The Mills Reef Park upgrades on Bruny Island, following strong community feedback. Continued work on our waste strategy to align with best practices. Funding to explore water quality investigation at Blackmans Bay Beach. Enhancing digital systems across council. The Margate to Huntingfield shared path contribution, an ongoing thing, what we would love to see funded. I thought I'd stay on council until that was done. I don't know how long I'll be here for, but I don't know if it'll be that long. But anyway, but that's, you know, a big action. And the community assistance graffiti removal, which stood out to me. And I guess I'm wondering, does that mean, so if community members have graffiti on their fences, is that what that aligns to? I'd like some more information on that, please.
Ms. Chakuti.
Thank you, through you, Mayor. We've yet to determine exactly the plans for that fund. So it came from really strong community feedback as well as advocacy from our local police station around actioning more in the graffiti removal space. So it is likely, yes, that it will be used to assist property owners, small businesses, to remove graffiti, and if that is not exactly the case, it will certainly be used for community programs to prevent graffiti or remove graffiti as well.
Great. Thank you. Midgley. Thank you, Mayor. And again, that just highlights, it's only a small amount, but it's a direct response that the community has been crying out for. So I guess my final thoughts, I agree. Finance is totally tough right now. Everything's gone up. I never shop now without looking at the specials. I work multiple jobs and, it is tough. I get that. In my other role, in my social work role, I see that tough every day. It's really hard. But council's not immune to this either. We have a hardship policy. We promote that. We support those who need help. And, it is, distressing that we have crippling circumstances every day in our community. But I believe this budget, while challenging, it's balanced, necessary and responsible. And I look forward, I have an open mind, and I look forward to hearing from my fellow councillors.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a question that I'd like to start with, and that is, what is the cumulative effect of annual deficits and surpluses, as shown in the annual reports and projections, over the last 10 years and expected for the next 5 years as a graph? And also, what is the impact of inflation in each year of the graph?
Mr. Spinks.
Thank you, Mayor. I don't have a graph for you, but I can give you the numbers. So over the last 10 years, our cumulative operating deficits have been just shy of $8 million. Over that same period, CPI has averaged 2.9%. Our forecast for the next 5 years of cumulative surpluses is just a fraction under $1 million. But I remind you that's premised on the 8% for next year and the 8% for the following year. So still fairly substantive deficits for the next 2 or 3 years, and then coming into surplus in years 4 and 5.
Thank you. Councillor Fox.
Thank you. I appreciate those comments. I don't think I've ever been aware as a councillor how far behind we're getting in terms of the cumulative effect of every decision we make every year basically we're spending more than our paycheck every year. Kingborough is a desirable place to live and work and play and has experienced rapid growth over 40 years. We have the highest income per capita in the region and house prices are inflating, making owners richer. And residents can afford to pay their rates now. Many people tell me I would rather pay more than have a deficit. An 8% increase represents $167 or a year increase, or $3 per week for the average ratepayer. That is not a lot of money in most people's weekly budget. The 8% rate rise recommended by staff reflects community priorities as listed in our reports and their needs as expressed in the recent survey. The proposed 8% rate increase provides for continuous improvement and it's not luxury money. Kingborough Council is known in the industry for running a lean machine and existing council assets worth $1 billion need to be maintained and renewed constantly. Council services the needs of a present 40,800 residents as well as future generations that will benefit from these assets. But construction material costs alone have increased 30%, according to the Mercury and Dion Lester, who's CEO of the Local Government Association. So that is, in my opinion, an irrefutable statement, and we are feeling that pressure as a council. We have a very low cash reserve also, and we're paying interest on our debt. We had an interest-free debt, but that has ceased. Now we are paying interest. That is also taking away from our spending money. And a rate rise of 8% does not provide any buffer for unforeseen events, particularly floods and fires, which we seem to have on a regular basis. And that doesn't include things like COVID or health issues. We're basically spending more than our paycheck. And I would recommend that we stay with the recommended 8% that the staff have very carefully presented to us. There is no hidden agenda. There is no buffer in this budget. And I would strongly recommend that we stick with the staff recommendation and with the requests from the community. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Next, I've got the Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. I want to start, too, by acknowledging the hard work of the Director of People and Finance and his team to produce this report and all the work involved in getting us to understand all of the information. Whilst I respect the recommendation, I also believe we need to raise revenue from our ratepayers very sensitively, and where there are other levers that we can pull that can pull in revenue, we need to be actively pursuing them. So I just want to start by saying how I thought it was very valuable that we refreshed our process this year by engaging the public about their priorities prior to our deliberations. I thank the community members who offered us their feedback. This shows that we are true to our core values of putting the community at the heart of everything we do. So last year when we considered the budget, we'd just gotten over a very large shock when our new CFO demonstrated that council's position was much worse than we had realised. We had not been properly calculating our depreciation. We'd hit a road bump for the plan for housing at Kingston Park was not realised, and we were also told that we'd been underrating for many, many years. When all of this was put together, we ended up recording a much larger deficit than anyone would have liked. At that time, I had argued hard for a large rate increase in line with the recommendation. But this year, I do feel a little bit different, and I really want to make the point about the other revenue-raising levers that can sit alongside rates. Firstly, making sure we are grant-ready. This means that this organisation needs to become obsessed with grants, obsessed with knowing what grants are coming up, being obsessed with looking at projects in light of what grants might be available, and being obsessed with getting projects ready for grants so we don't miss out on anything as they come up. I also believe we could be advocating with more vigour and enthusiasm to our state and federal members. Secondly, I think we need to drive the development of housing at Kingston Park. This could be such a big success story, and we need a strategy that can attract the investment that it needs. It feels a little bit like things have stagnated, and all the while we are copping the huge payments on a loan that we never really planned on keeping. With interest rates coming down over this year, it really is time that we put our best foot forward and picked up that momentum. Thirdly, I think we seriously need to consider using debt to generate an income stream. Taking out loans to build offices to be rented out, for example, or a multi-storey car parking, which in time pays itself off and then starts generating an income, is a long-term vision that we should bring to the forefront of our thinking. Fourthly, I think we need to consider paid parking. This is a fair system of user pays, which operates with ease in many other jurisdictions. And fifth, I think we need a refresh on how we prioritise our capital works, so we are ensuring that we are being fiscally responsible. Councillor Fox, our most experienced councillor, taught me when I started as a councillor that if you can manage a household budget, you can manage a council budget. And I know that in my household, my budget means that my family have to live within our means. It should also be the same for our capital works program. We must be operating within our means. And so while we are tight, we need to keep our program tight also. And this also means not making projects much larger than they need to be. For example, when residents are saying they just want a pedestrian crossing, they just literally want a pedestrian crossing, rather than thousands being spent on master plans and feasibility reports, resulting in millions of dollars worth of recommendations. So to summarise, I believe that rate increases need to be sensitive and more effort can be made towards getting grant ready, driving the development of Kingston Park, using debt wisely to generate income, implementing paid parking and keeping our capital works program within our means. So with all these five levers in mind, I cannot justify imposing a rate increase of 8, and as such I won't be supporting the recommendation. I'd be much more comfortable imposing a 6.5 or a 7, and I would support an alternative motion if one is put.
Thank you, Councillor Gladright. Councillor Ntoli.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you to everyone that shared. I don't have a prepared statement, but I do want to propose an amendment. If I may first, though, have a brief, Mayor?
Preamble. We might have heard one of those today.
Yeah. I believe that under the leadership of our new CEO, that the wind is changing and it's a refreshing wind. The two most important things a council will do in their tenure is to approve budgets and to choose a CEO. I've had the pleasure of being intimately involved in both, and I think our new CEO is putting around him a cracker team, and obviously that is an evolving piece of work. Yes, it is true that you have to live within your means like a family home, but it's very hard when you're the CFO of a council where you have compliance and legislation that you have to meet with a whole range of expenses. So it's a lot more difficult, and I do want to take my hat off to the finance team. They've been nothing but open. I was speaking to two colleagues of mine in other LGAs, and they horrified me by saying that all their conversations and correspondence with their CFO is blocked and it can only be done through the CEO.
I don't know the point of order to that, but I just think that's not necessary to state that.
What is your point of order, though?
This point of order, like just to share that, what other councils are doing, and that's just too confidential information.
I'm not sure that I can find anything under the meeting regs to back that point of order up, but just continue, please.
Thank you. As I said, I was talking to two other colleagues of mine, and was horrified that they don't, they're not allowed to talk to their CFO. It can only be done through the CEO. That's never been the case here, and I've loved the fact that our finance team have been open. I can contact them anytime, they are transparent, they will push their point, they will make their point, and I just really appreciated that. And I've actually found this year's budget process more thorough than even in the previous year, and I was pretty impressed with the previous year. So I want to take my hat off to the finance team and the CEO. I am leaning towards the logic shared by our Deputy Mayor. We've had a lot of discussions internally. A couple of years ago, we had to choose 9.8%. It was recommended we could have gone higher, but we chose 9.8, and and the target is 8%. But I feel the mood around the table would be better served by an amendment that is closer to 6.5% in terms of a rate increase. I have shared an amendment with the council CEO and Amanda Morton earlier. I'd also like to add a savings target to that as well, and that's a $200,000 savings target for the discretion of the CEO. It's a $55.9 million budget. And if we can't save $200,000 as well as raising the rates, we need to be careful. So it's $55.9 million in revenue. Of that, depreciation is a 30% expenditure. It's a lot. And I would be comfortable reviewing our spend at a higher rate next year once we have better control, if needed, on our depreciation program, and that is something that the council officers are working on expeditiously. Until then, I can't stomach a rate increase of 8%. I believe 6.5% is a better compromise. We can't go back to the bad old days of 2.8% and set ourselves up for failure, especially when we launched into a very expensive development in Kingston Park. But I think under the current circumstances, with my knowledge of where we're heading and my understanding of the budget, I'm comfortable with 6.5% and a $200,000 efficiency target for the CEO. So with that, Mayor, I'd like to propose an amendment for discussion, which I have given to council officers when they have a moment, if they could put it up.
Bear a moment. Bear with us.
While we're doing that, can I ask the commercial rates, is it also going to, this also would affect commercial rates as well, or is that separate?
Mr. Spinks.
Through you, Mayor, that the proposal is that the same rate increase apply to the general rate for residential, industrial and commercial properties.
So where do we go from here, Mayor?
So we just need to get that back up on the screen. Something's happened. See? Never work with technology. Animals and children can be bribed with food. Technology can't. Here we go. Okay, so I'm just... So that is part of your...
So this is an amendment that is a modification of one that I put forward, Mayor, in which I'm proposing a rate of 6.5% and a savings or a cost-cutting target of $200,000. The CEO wanted to know whether he needed advice on whether that $200,000 could be something he determined as he and his team saw fit, or whether it needed guidance from me. I'm of the view that he will report back to us any savings he made, and I'm not too sure I need to be shackling him with guidance on whether he should be making savings up to certain dollar values on certain line points.
So where you've got the X's
and the whys. Can you fill in those gaps for us now then? So you want 200,000 in there?
Yes.
Yep. And what do you want in where it says why?
That was a suggestion from staff, but I'm of the view that we don't need that line at all.
Can we get some advice from the CEO, please?
Through you, Mayor. So that sentence, I'll read it for the record, individual budget line reductions in excess of why we've referred to in this case, to deliver these savings must be formally reported to Council for consideration and approval. The intent of that line was to, I guess, align with financial transparency across the organisation. If we were going to be making significant changes above a certain threshold, that they would be brought back for Council approval rather than them being unilaterally decided by myself, in this case, about where they would exist in the organisation. The reason for the figure was smaller changes to budget where savings would be achieved would be done under delegation. However, if there were more significant of a certain amount that the Council chose, that would be formally reported and sought decision and approval. Up to my financial delegations, if you didn't have that, I would be able to make those changes without this line, but that was included to try and increase visibility and transparency.
So, having heard that, do you wish that sentence to stay in, and if so, do you wish to put a figure in there?
I don't believe it needs to stay in there. I think the CEO is more than capable of making those decisions, and he'll report back to us any operational savings he makes anyway as part of his role. But I also note, Mayor, that there's no mention of the rate.
I'm getting
in there.
To that, but yeah. I'm just dealing with this at the moment. So you want to you would like to remove the last sentence? Is that correct?
Personally, but it's not an absolute thing for me.
Well, we need to be clear what it is that is being proposed in the amendment before we put the amendment up for others to speak to. So you need to decide what the amendment is.
I would prefer to just remove that last sentence,
okay,
and he can
just
decide
that
how
sentence
to
and park it somewhere in case
yeah,
we need
so
it again.
Yeah, and so the CEO can decide.
Now we would also need. I assume that. Mr. Spinks, you have the appropriate wording that would for 6.5%, because the wording isn't as simple as just saying 6.5%. It's quite complicated. So we have, here we go. Yep. So all of that.
You'll need to modify point two. Is that right, CEO?
CEO.
Through you, Mayor, the additional clause that Councillor Antoli would be additional to the existing clause two. Clause two deals with changes to the budget
throughout
the budget without making savings, so that's operating
okay,
within the
separate,
overall estimates. The clause that you have requested here is for savings titles.
Thank you. So it's separate then.
Can I just also make a point of clarification? So the... with the clause that you have, I guess, requested there around the savings targets, that would, in this case, reduce the total estimates by $200,000 across the whole budget. So that where it refers to estimates, that number it would now be $200,000 less than the published budget.
Right, yep.
Okay, thanks. So that is, if everyone's clear, that so this is the long... version, this is the technical version of the necessary resolution for 6.5% rather than 8%, and then we also have the addition of the $200,000 saving. If everyone is clear with that, then I need to check with the original mover and seconder, Councillor Midgley and Councillor Fox, whether it is acceptable.
No. Absolutely not.
Okay, so that means that we will now need to debate the amended motion. So anybody, Councillor Antoli, did you want to start the debate on the amended motion?
Yeah, I'll just start it very quickly.
Sorry, I need a seconder for the amendment. Beg your pardon. And it's seconded by Councillor Bain. Thank you, Councillor Antoli.
I'll make it brief because I'm sure there's collective wisdom far in excess of my own. I acknowledge the need, the request. I believe that there is work to be done. The 8% is based on a long-term financial plan. That long-term financial plan is impacted at least 30% by the strategic asset management plan, which is our plan on how we manage our assets, and it informs that the rate of depreciation that our assets go through, and the depreciation on an asset means we have to fix it when it goes bang. We have to prepare it, we have to maintain it so it doesn't go bang, and that's an enormous cost because we do two main things. We do planning and we do asset management. These are the two main things council does. So there is identified work that needs to be done before the long-term financial plan accurately forecasts the need for 8% or 9.8% or 12% or any percent. For now, I believe the balance is around 6.5%. That is based on all the workshops we've done, and it's based on the facts, in my view, presented before us.
Thank you, Councillor Ntoli. Further contributions on the amendment, Councillor Bain.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Firstly, let me say that I agree with a lot of the things that previous speakers have already said, acknowledging we have a huge deficit that we need to deal with. And also just to concur with what other speakers have said about the Finance Department have done a great job presenting some of the information, answering questions along the way, so kudos to them. The part I'm struggling with is I feel that this needs to be addressed with all the necessary information in place and through our long-term financial plan, and that's the reason I'm supporting the 6.5%. So I think it's worthwhile just running through some of the things which will be occurring over the next 12 months, which I believe will give Council a clearer picture of our financial situation. So firstly, it's already been spoken about the development of a long-term financial plan. So if we look at 6.7 on page 76 of the Council report, it states, Council's long-term financial plan will be updated for better asset planning data and will seek to address the challenges noted above, such as ongoing underlying deficits, cost growth, the cash position, and ensuring funds are available in the future for required asset renewal. So it's clearly a very important piece of information to inform us looking long-term. The second thing is the long-term asset management plan. So 2.6 on page 73, the report tells us the financial plan's update has been deferred to allow Council's asset management maturity to improve, given its critical importance to long-term financial sustainability. It is important that robust asset management data and plans inform key assumptions that underpin the financial plan. So this long-term asset management plan is key to us knowing how much money is required each financial year for our capital works, and at the moment we don't have that. The next thing in the next 12 months, depreciation. So I think following COVID, we've seen depreciation figures increase dramatically following revaluations. I believe next financial year will be the final major asset class to be revalued following COVID. So I think we'll have a more and more accurate picture of where our depreciation total sits. Debt's already been mentioned. The interest account is currently $670,000 per annum. So it's costing us that much that we can't use on other things. This debt's obviously associated with Kingston Park developments. So I think a lot of work needs to be done during the financial year to provide a clearer picture on timeframes around that, and how we can go about getting that debt off our books so we can spend it on things worthwhile or take it off our deficits. And the final thing is the business improvement projects. So we're seeing significant, much-needed investment in digital and other business improvement projects over the next financial year, which intends to considerably improve the way Council operates. I think this, along with the EBA negotiations, will have implications in our long-term financial plan, and these things have to be taken into consideration. And just the final point is there's at least $550,000 of additional expenditure in this budget, which is a one-off. So those things will occur if the budget's passed next financial year, and then that money will be freed up the following year for us to allocate it to something like the deficit. So a lot of this is one-off, and we can do the long-term financial plan and reallocate it the following year. And just finally on the reduction in expenditure, I think the thing to note with the 6.5% rate increase is that our underlying deficit won't change unless we reduce expenditure. And I think it's not fair on the community for us to be talking about this deficit, which we need to address and bring down, and then for us not to allocate any money towards it. And for that reason, I think it's reasonable for us to say to the CEO, can you find us $200,000 in reduction in expenditure? And I believe he'll be able to do that without impacting some of the things which we are focusing on improving in our business over the next 12 months. So for all those reasons, I'll be supporting the amendment.
Thank you, Councillor Bain. Further contributions on the amendment? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Thanks, everyone, for speaking. Always learn a lot. In regards to just a couple of comments, so there was a comment made by Councillor Antoli regarding that we would never go as low as 2.8%. Am I correct? Well, you know, not maybe exactly not those words. Sorry, Councillor Antoli, don't know exactly what you... I can't remember exactly what you said. I didn't write it down. But it was in regards to that, during those times I was on council that time, the 2.8% actually wasn't what staff put forward. They put forward possibly 4. And when it was 4%, they put possibly forward 8. And so, therefore, we had these similar discussions where we made these reductions, and therefore, that's kind of where we are now. I'm just wondering at all if staff would like to make any comment in regards to those decisions that we made back then and the impact that it has had on now.
Mr. Spinks, although he wasn't here at the time, so...
The other day when I had a conversation with CFO that he did actually have those figures and reminded me of what they were, so I just thought it was good to highlight that again.
He is also the Director of People and Finance these days, not the CFO.
Yes.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, I do have here in front of me what previous year's rate increases have been. What I don't have in front of me, unfortunately, is what the recommendations were for each of those years. I do know that I think it was the 17-18 year, I think it was an 8.8% was recommended, but that was changed on the floor of the meeting to 4%. But I don't know if anyone who has been here a little bit longer than I can provide some more context, perhaps. Try Tim?
Everyone turns and looks at Mr. Smee, but Mr. Jones is going to come to the rescue.
Through you, Mayor. I think it's fair to say that probably the increases were around 2% less than was recommended in nearly every year. There was discussions between various parties offline before the proposal was put to council.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. Yes, thank you. That was my recollection as well. In regards to just comments regarding Kingston Park, I absolutely, when I met on Friday with staff, I said I'd really love to see some action in this space. We need transparency to community so they know what council is doing in regards to our actions here, and that the finance situation is changing. But I guess in regards to this is, again, one of those lean, you know, operations that we run, to actually have staff dedicated to that space, what do we have in that in regards to moving forward? Like, is that a new position that we need to take the reins and move forward on this? Like, what is that sort of impact where we do need to move forward, but yet we kind of had a master plan that proposed other things and timelines that proposed other things, and here we are now in this situation that we've changed direction. Mr. Stewart.
Through you, Mayor. So in relation to Kingston Park, we did have a master plan for the site to develop it. And as you might remember, there's a number of undeveloped lots within there that had been earmarked for the development of apartments. We did have a relationship with Traders in Purple to a development agreement with them. In conjunction with them, we've recognise that the cost of construction and the market saleability of apartments within that area doesn't equate. Essentially, the cost to build is too high to develop those sort of apartments and then sell them at a reasonable price that the market would expect. Given that, we've mutually decided to terminate our relationship with Traders in Purple. That now provides us the opportunity to think differently about those tracts of land and what we might do with them, noting that we do still have an established master plan in place. So that would require some different thinking potentially around what we do there, and there's also planning constraints on that particular area. In regard to your question about staffing, we have no staff allocated to strategic development like this. We have no staffing dedicated to Kingston Park. This is one of the symptoms of running a lean organisation. You don't have resource in these types of places to be able to pick up and move on a dime when conditions change to be able to drive a new program of work forward. It's certainly something that staff will be looking at over the coming weeks, and once we have a budget for next year about the way we respond. Certainly we're looking at some of the resourcing within inside the organisation about putting the resource in the right places to be able to undertake these types of activities, because we know of the strategic importance that they hold for this organisation, both in terms of the development and community build within Kingborough, but certainly acknowledging the cost of the debt that we have that was from the development of Kingston Park and the unrealised opportunity that we have around those blocks within the Kingston Park area. So to summarise, I guess it's recognised that this is an area of strategic importance. The fact that we haven't been able to move as yet is a symptom of the resourcing, which is a symptom of the amount of capacity we have within the organisation, but it is treated as a very significant opportunity that we have to address this and drive, I guess, an outcome forward, which will hopefully be able to both address the further development and amenity that we have within that Kingston Park area, alongside also delivering a financial outcome for Kingborough Council.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley, was any further? Right, further discussion on the amendment. Councillor Richardson.
Thank you. Look, straight off the bat, I'm supportive of the amendment. I think we really need to take stock of what we're doing here. And there's an old saying that goes that you need to get better the same way you got sick. We got to the position that we're in over a long period of time, and to then, you know, come to our senses, if you like, and then say, right, we want to get back to a better position over 4 years, and we're going to do that by a series of significant rate rises in quick succession, I think is not reasonable, and I think is unfair to the community. We can get back to a surplus position. We've been shown we can get back to a surplus position in a longer period of time. I don't think that that's unreasonable. I don't think that that poses significant risk to the organisation. I think we absolutely need to take some lessons from this whole experience around underdoing it, but I don't think having big rises in quick succession is the solution. We heard earlier about $8 million and $8 million reduction in income over a period of time. But to me, what I hear is that's an $8 million hit to the pockets of the people of our municipality that we are proposing. So can we do it over a long period of time? Yes. Has the modelling shown us that that works? Yes. I don't believe that we should do hard and fast. I think we should do sustainable and slow.
Further discussion on the amendment. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. If I could simply adopt a combination of the previous speakers rather than speaking myself, then I would. But suffice to say, I'm supportive of the amendment. I'm comfortable with the proposition that we are going to be pushing out our return to surplus a couple of years further on the basis that we are not, as Councillor Richardson quite rightly points out, going to try and do this quickly and enforce that upon the community. A rate rise in the order of 6.5% is clearly warranted, in my view, but I can't support the trajectory that's been proposed. I'm comfortable with the position that 6.5 this year would put us in, and then making appropriate considerations for the next financial year, once the work that Councillor Baines quite rightly identified as being outstanding has been completed, and we are in a position to properly forecast the Council's financial position for the following years.
I think that is a reasonable approach. I think it is a balanced approach. I think it keeps faith with our community that we're trying to do the right thing by them. And again, as Councillor Richardson quite rightly points out, an $8 million hit to our revenue is $8 million removed from the pockets of our ratepayers. It's $8 million that they don't spend necessarily in the community potentially. It's $8 million that we spend. But I think sometimes we get hung up on what it is in dollars per week or dollars per day and what great value it must be. But I actually think that what Councillor Richardson's identified is the stark reality, which is that ultimately that money is being drawn out of the pockets of our community, and so I think we need to think very seriously about that. I'm not comfortable doing that in the information situation that we are currently in. I think 6.5% is a far more balanced approach.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Councillor Dean.
Look, I'm not going to repeat a lot of what has already been said, other than just to indicate my support for this amendment. I think it is sensible, it is balanced, and agree with all those points that have made speaking in the fore. So in the interest of speeding this up, I will support this amendment.
Thank you, Councillor Dean. Councillor Gladrott.
I don't know who I ask this question to, if it's these guys, but just regarding the $200,000 coming out of the operational budget, why operational and why not capital? Sorry,
because it's recurrent. Because they're trying to remove it. Because if it comes out of the operational budget, then it's removing it every year to create ongoing savings.
Okay, but is that even possible? Like, is that an achievable ask?
CEO.
So, just to clarify, in the wording that you have listed in the proposed three, it doesn't necessarily say that there are recurrent budget savings with the current wording. So we just need to be clear if the intent is around a recurrent budget saving, then that would need to be articulated in here. With most savings, there's always going to be a balance with one-off and recurrent. So we just need to be cautious around what expectations might be here and might not be here. In terms of...
Okay, so before you go on, yep. Can we just clarify with the original mover of the motion what the intention was so that everyone's clear? Because I was assuming it was recurrent.
Yeah. Thank you, Mayor. It's only recurrent when it's probably to do with staffing, I'm assuming, that sort of a thing. But the intent is if we are taking from the community with one hand with a rate increase this large, we need to give back on the other, and that giving back, in my view, is cost-cutting. And I'm happy to leave that entirely up to the CEO to make that determination over the next 12 months, whether that is something that is recurrent or not.
Okay.
My hope is that it does not affect frontline services.
Yep. CEO.
Through you, Mayor. So I guess the what a savings figure for a single year does is it reduces the deficit. So there is an inherent advantage in just reducing the deficit because, as we've talked about, the larger the deficit, the worse financial result is. If we can deliver ongoing recurrent benefits, absolutely that's what we want to look for, because that obviously has a compounding effect, as we've just heard, on budget performance. So I will take it from this resolution that if it passes, that delivering a recurrent benefit is something that is ideal, but the target is around a $200,000 challenge there. In terms of why operational saving, I guess because it comes back down to the, the degree at which it impacts our underlying result at the end of the year. Obviously, council has the ability to adjust a capital program, and in some ways the adjustments to capital program are somewhat easier because it's individual lines that we could choose to defer them a year or bring them back. I guess what this is doing is speaking probably more to the heart of the ongoing operating costs of the organisation and requesting savings in that area. So it does come to some of the point that the Mayor raised around the recurrent nature of the savings, but my understanding from the challenge being posed by councillors is it's around that operating cost that you're looking to see savings.
The Deputy Mayor.
Thanks. So just like off the top of your head, what sorts of things would you be targeting?
I don't think we want to put him on the spot right now.
But I sort of just, like, is it going to affect staff? Like, what?
So can I just, before the CEO answers, I think it's probably, that question is probably why we needed that other sentence in this part of the amendment. Because I don't think that we should be leaving it up to the CEO. If we're making a decision to reduce the operational expenditure by $200,000, then we should be taking responsibility for what it is that is chosen as part of that. I feel very strongly that we shouldn't be going for the low-hanging fruit, like, you know, you start to talk about things like that and people go, oh, we'll just trim a bit off the arts budget or we'll just trim a bit off this or a bit off that because they're not core. And before you know it, a lot of the community development stuff starts to get affected. So I personally am uncomfortable with, and it's not a matter of trust or anything like that, but I think in terms of transparency and also accountability, that we should be collectively responsible for making those decisions. And so that sentence should have stayed in there. CEO.
Was there a question there? Sorry, Mayor.
No, it was more me on my soapbox, but what do you think of what I said?
There you go. Okay, let's cover what I think of that. So, look, undertaking savings in an organisation is always a serious matter that needs to be taken into with a lot of consideration, especially when we have established budgets. There's an expectation from staff that operate to those budgets that they'll be able to use the budget allocated to be able to achieve the results that we know that, you know, our community is looking for from this organisation. You know, delivering programs, delivering services, core infrastructure planning, as was talked about earlier, you know, making sure that we have really good solid plans for when grant opportunities arise. So none of it is taken lightly. I guess there's probably a range of different opportunities around the organisation that would be considered as part of a program like this, alongside ongoing engagement with staff, who are the people that are directly tasked with delivering the outcomes across the organisation, across a number of portfolios. So it's not something that I would like to jump on straight away and say, yep, these are the places that we would deliver our savings. What we would do is need to have a really good conversation with staff across the organisation about what are the things that we could trim, what are the things that we could stop, what are the impacts of those sort of things. Certainly, regardless of whether or not there's a sentence within here, this is something that I would want to be talking to councillors about. And certainly, regardless of whether I was coming back for an approval around a reduction of a certain budget item, it would certainly be reported through budget reporting on a regular basis as well about the areas that were identified for saving. So what I'm saying is there would be a program associated with a savings program of the sort to engage, to listen, and then deliver the outcomes, and that would be something that there would be visibility to councillors on.
Thank you.
So then can I just summarise my...
Yep, sure.
Thing? So,
yes.
Yeah, so I'm not comfortable with that element of the amendment. I'm happy to support 6.5, but not this part.
Okay, well, they come as a package, so you'd need to then vote against in its entirety. We've got Councillor Midgley and Councillor Street, both with their
question.
Lights... Yep, I'm getting to it. Both with your lights on, and I was about to say it's a question because you've both spoken on the amendment. So, Councillor Midgley on a question.
Thank you. So before I asked a question in regards to, you know, have we checked the budget, looked at all areas across council to ensure that we are, you know, on track, that we've cut where we need to get where we are. I heard yes, like we had. So now we are doing that again. And, yeah, that, you know, that concerns me. When I feel like I've heard that we've already done that. Staff know that we're in a tight budget. So I just want to get get reassurance that we actually did go to staff and look at across our operations where we could cut. I've been a council officer. I've been in that situation prior to budget, and that was definitely what we presented. So I'm thinking that similarly we did that across our operations area as well. So I'm just wanting to know exactly how fiscal were we, and did we have these conversations already to get to where we are now?
The CEO.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, we have had these conversations. And whilst it will be a difficult conversation to have again with staff around the areas which we might have to target for further savings, it is something that we can undertake. It's uncomfortable, as it notes within the wording of Clause 3 as proposed up there, noting that there may be some impact compromising service delivery or strategic priorities. So there will be an impact from it. There's no such thing in this environment as being able to cut something without it having a direct impact. So we need to be aware that when we do look at further budget savings there will be an impact from it. So, yes, we've been through this. Can we do it again? Of course, we can go through the process again. It'll be an uncomfortable place to be, but I guess that's what's being proposed within the wording here.
Councillor Street with a question.
I'd like to move an amendment to the amendment, please.
Okay. Try me.
I'd like to add back the sentence that was removed with the number $50,000, please.
Yep. The sentence you cut out earlier. I said keep.
That one.
Okay, is that amendment acceptable to the mover and seconder of the amendment, which was Councillor Antoli and Councillor Bain?
Yes, to me.
Yes?
Yes, to me.
And Councillor Bain, thank you. Okay, so this is now the amended motion. Everyone has spoken, so unless it's a question, you've got a question?
Yeah, yep, can you just question? Explain what that sentence that's been added means exactly?
CEO.
Through you, Mayor. Essentially, what the sentence that's been added, so again, I'll read it out for the record, individual budget line reductions in excess of $50,000 to deliver these savings must formally be reported to Council for consideration and approval. Essentially, what this addition to the clause is stating is that there are identified savings above and beyond $50,000 from any particular line item within the budget, they will come to Council for a formal decision about whether or not they want to undertake the change to that budget line to deliver the saving. Essentially what that stops happening is, you know, finding an individual line item that happens to have $200,000 allocated to it, taking it as savings, and then Council getting surprised why a $200,000 line item within the budget hasn't been developed and delivered within the financial year. So it provides you with decision-making on the substantive or the large ticket changes that might be proposed within this savings target.
Councillor Bain, on a question?
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, a question. Just around clarification, with the $200,000 reduction, just to clarify, that can also be reduced from the new expenditure that's been added as part of this budget. It doesn't have to be existing expenditure from this financial year.
CEO.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, that would be correct.
Okay. Councillor Fox.
With the reduction from 8% to 6.5%, how much does that represent in dollars?
Per household or overall?
For the average ratepayer.
So it would reduce the house price, median house price of $670,000, it would go from $167.50 per annum additional to $136.70 per annum. So
we're talking about $30 difference.
$31.
Which is why I oppose the amendment. Thank you.
Okay, I think it sounds like we've all exhausted our questions on the amendment, so I'm going to put the amendment so that we can then go back to discussing the substantive motion. So the amendment is as printed on the screen. It's moved by Councillor Antoli and seconded by Councillor Bain. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against?
Aye.
A show of hands is required. All those in favour? Is Councillors Antoli, Dean, Bain, Richardson, Street and Reet? And those against is Councillors Fox, Midgley and Gladewright. The amendment is carried. We are back on the substantial motion, and on the substantial motion so far we have had Councillors Midgley, Fox, Gladewright and Antoli speak. So I'm looking for further contributions on that. I'll go if nobody else wants to go. All right, well, I'll do mine and then you can think about whether you want to speak. I think as we have already indicated tonight, there's been a lot of work that has gone into the preparation of this budget, and I would also echo the comments of other councillors in thanking the staff who have put so much effort into it. And as we've also talked about, budgeting is never simple, whether you're managing a household budget, a business, or in this case, serving a community. And I do feel like what we've tried to do for in developing the 25-26 budget is getting a responsible balance between the long-term sustainability of our finances and but without, I think now with this amendment to reduce the proposed rate rise from 8% to 6.5% is not placing an unreasonable burden on our community through those rates. One of the big challenges that we do have is that huge asset portfolio that we've already talked about, over $1 billion across roads and playgrounds and tracks and trails and stormwater and buildings and sporting facilities and parks and everything that we have. And those things to manage and to maintain are expensive. There's no, just like maintaining a house is expensive or maintaining a car. I thought that the budget engagement process that we had with the community this year was really valuable. We flipped it around a little bit. We went out earlier so that we could get that feedback, not about percentages of rate rises and asking the community, would you like this or that with the rate rises, but actually asking and getting an understanding of what is most important to our residents. And we had 279 people who took the time in some very thoughtful responses to engage with us on that, because that feedback certainly helps to shape our discussions. And the things that I think with the amendment that we've put through here tonight, particularly where we talk about recognising cuts to services, you know, that could be impacted, we need to remember that the community has told us that there are a number of core services that are very important to them, things like roads, things like waste collection, our parks, our sporting grounds and our trails. That's what the community has said to us matters most, and so we have to make sure that we still have the resources in the future to be able to deliver on maintaining and enhancing those moving forward. We've already talked about the 30% increase in construction costs over the last 3 years, and I don't think we've seen the last of those, sadly. We have had a reputation that we strove for up until a few years ago of trying to be one of the lowest rating councils in southern Tasmania. And unfortunately, that is putting us in the situation where we are now in terms of our longer-term sustainability. And so we do have some challenges. We put together a long-term financial plan that was looking to get us out of that, and there have been a whole range of factors that have made sure that we haven't reached those targets. But we're not alone in that, and I think this is a challenge that is facing local governments all around the country at the moment. And we saw a federal parliamentary inquiry about 12 to 18 months ago, the focus of which was the sustainability of local governments right across Australia, because there are about 539, I think is the correct figure, local governments across the country. And we have collectively limited funding options outside of rates and grants. And I think, and a few councillors tonight have quoted the CEO of Legat, Dion Lester, and I think he was quite right when he said in his piece in the Mercury last week, it seems perverse to blame councils for rate rises when they don't have the tools they need to reduce their reliance on rates. So I think if anything tonight we've had a really healthy conversation about what can we do moving forward, and the Deputy Mayor in particular has touched on some issues that I think we do need to seriously tackle in the future, whether it's things like paid parking, whether it is investing in things that will generate revenue for us moving forward. We are of course also grappling with issues of cost shifting and increasing costs that are coming from other levels of government, and in these budget estimates are already increasing costs from the TAS Audit Office because we have to use them to do our audit. Could I ask for an extension of 3 minutes, please? Thank you. Moved, Councillor Midgley, seconded, Councillor Gladright. All of those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Thank you. Seems weird moving that, asking for that myself. We already are seeing TAS Audit Office fees going up. We know that the Tasmanian Electoral Commission fees are going up as well, and just to maintain our electoral roll, on top of the other costs that we have to have, like raising our... that are involved in local government elections. We know that our expenses this year are rising by 6.3%, so we can't go lower than that, otherwise we really would be going even further backwards. And I think there is some serious conversations to be had amongst local government, and I have already raised it with the General Management Committee of the Local Government Association, that we need to look at the formulas used in the Council Cost Index, because that's currently sitting at 3.1%. It's made up of a key range of factors, and I don't think those ratios are right, because it's not reflective of the cost of doing business for the majority of councils who are having rate rises well in excess of that year after year after year. So there is some work as a sector that we need to do. But I think that what I will finish on is this, and that is that there are some challenges in this budget, but I think what is really positive in it is that we are setting the groundwork for future improvement. And we're investing in better systems to improve our efficiency and our collaboration. And just as importantly, I think we're working to change our organisational culture. And I think that we need to meet customer expectations because our community are very engaged. They're very intelligent. They have high levels of expectations about what we will deliver to them in terms of our services. And so we want to meet those customer expectations. We should be exceeding them and deliver better service and to make it easier for our residents to interact with us as councils, putting all our forms up online, having more streamlined processes. So I think that there are some exciting things for the future. And I'll finish by saying thank you to all councillors for engaging tonight in the debate in the way in which you have. I think that a hallmark of this council is that we can have reasoned and passionate debate and come from different perspectives, but I thank you all for doing so in a respectful way, because I know that at the heart of everybody sitting around this table, and that includes our staff, is doing the very best for the community that we represent as councillors and for the community that our staff serve as staff. So thank you, and I look forward to us making improvements in the coming year. Is there any further discussion on the budget?
Mayor, I'd just like to add something. Now that we've included a new clause 3,
yes,
it's just thrown out some of our numbering.
So we need to renumber.
We do. So what is now clause 8?
Yep.
There's a reference in there to, in the first paragraph, to part 6. That now needs to be part 7.
Thank you.
So, where are we?
Oh, hang on. You've already renumbered.
So it was clause 7.
Have you already renumbered, Mrs. Morton? Oh, okay. Oh, there, right,
is this
there
the
we go.
Version with the new clause in it?
Okay, so it's old number 7, and that refers to now.
I just want to
that will become clause 8 and refer to part 7.
Correct.
Okay, yep.
And then similarly over in clause 15, the same thing happens.
So then that will say clause
14.
14.
Correct.
Thank you, and we will renumber accordingly. Thank you very much. Now, I can't, it's so long ago, I can't remember. Councillor Midgley, you moved the original motion. Would you like to sum up?
Only to say, yep, thanks everybody, councillors and staff for all the hard work. We have a lot of unknowns. I moved this original amendment. I don't support the amendment, so I will be voting against this, which is kind of funny because I moved it in the first place. Our rates are good rates. We live, breathe, play, work them every day. People have a long list of things that they'd love to be seen done in our municipality. Staff also have a long list of things, and now we're looking at cutting some services. We have ideas for Kingston Park and parking, and we have a lean staff, and we've got to move forward in these areas, but it comes also at a compromise and a cost. Thank everybody for their contribution. It is great that we can have a sensible discussion on this. So I look forward to reviewing the financial papers over the next year at Council and see where we might meet, I guess. But, yeah, thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley, for summing up. I'm going to put the recommendation moved by Councillor Midgley and seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour? Against? A show of hands is required. All those in favour is Councillors Antoli, Dean, Bain, Richardson, Street and Reet. And those against is Councillors Fox, Midgley and Gladright. The motion is carried. That takes us now to the page 277, the financial report for May 2025 with recommendation on page 279. Do I have a mover and a second? I've got a mover in Councillor Bain, a seconder in Councillor Midgley. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. I'll try and keep it pretty brief. So we're looking at the 30th of May finance reports. The forecast for your budgeted underlying loss has remained pretty similar to last month. The few changes for revenue, the rates revenue forecast has reduced by $30,000. The user fees forecast has been adjusted by $100,000 from $150 to $250. That's mainly on the back of the increased fitness memberships and stadium hire. On the expenditure side, the big move here is the depreciation forecast. It's gone from $450 to $250, so possibly just a question there on what the reasons behind the depreciation forecast adjustment are.
Through you, Mayor. So this is our old friend, the capitalisation issue again. So those who are familiar with the audit panel would know that it's been a large catch-up exercise to get all that capitalisation done, which is now complete, we feel. So what that's meant is our depreciation charge is a little bit more than we had forecast 2 or 3 months ago when we made the initial adjustment.
Great, thank you for the answer and no more questions.
Sorry, I'll just do that again because my light wasn't on, so it wouldn't have been picked up on the tape. Apologies. I'm going to put the recommendation moved by Councillor Bain, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against, motion is carried unanimously. It takes us now to appendices on page 300. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in Councillor Midgley, a seconder in Councillor Glade-Wright. Are there any questions on the appendices? No, thank you. Still on page 300, notices of motion. There were no notices of motion. Oh, sorry. You can tell I'm tired now. Racing through. I didn't put that one. I beg your pardon. So I need... I'm putting the recommendation now that the appendices attached to the agenda be received and noted. It was moved by Councillor Midgley and seconded by Councillor Glade-Wright. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. At the time the agenda was printed, there were no notices of motion, and we're now at confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. Confirmation of minutes, applications for leave of absence and tender assessment AB2506, provision of curbside collection services. Looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Got a mover in Councillor Richardson and a seconder in Councillor Fox. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. Thank you very much to those who have been in attendance this evening and stayed the distance. Very impressive. And to those who have been watching along at home, this now ends the open session of Council, and in accordance with Council's meetings audio recording guidelines policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease. Open session of Council adjourned at 8:53 p.m. and good evening.